welcome National Children, special welcome to the teaching. This is the first time we're asking you to come. It's good. So I think it's good. Democracy at its work. Honorable members, according to our program, public works were supposed to start with public works. One, they are not here, but two, the National Treasury has informed us that they have another commitment. So they are requesting that we start with them. So I'll really request your indulgence that we allow them. I suppose that it's not going to be a long meeting. Our colleagues from Public Works are here, and a special welcome to you. I see the chairperson not here, but just make you here, and other members are here as well. Welcome. But I think that we have your permission. This is our meeting. It's not only for us. Now, though the meeting is for it's a meeting for the Standing Committee on Appropriation, but it's ours because we have invited you to join us. Without any much ado then, hoping that we are agreeing, let me again welcome the Director General of National Treasury, Mr. Khanyako. Mr. Khanyako, I don't know if your team is settled. I see some people are not here, but without any waste of time, I would like you to, but before we do that, let me just wait for the PG to sit down so that I can ask him formally, you know. Yeah, you can just sit down there next to your colleague from National Treasury, DG. DG, I had, in your absence, made a request, you know, that the same thing that you had requested, the National Treasury had requested, and our invitation to them was a little bit late. Now they have another commitment, and I know that you had requested as well to be given an early opportunity so that you can do you can get to other things. I had just requested that if we could allow National Treasury, I don't think that we're going to be long, just to quickly go through them, and then after which then we can come to you. I had spoken to honorable members of the Public Works Portfolio Committee. But thank you very much. I see you're nodding. I assume that you're fine with that arrangement. Thank you very much for your understanding. PG Khanyako, can
introduce your team. Thank you, Chair. And
before you do that, maybe I should then formally what you call for the sake of the members, just explain why we invited you. The reason we invited you is that you are in charge of a number of grants, of which we have discovered that those grants have not been properly, what you call, utilized. There is an understanding on those grants, on a number of grants. One is the Financial Management and Systems Grant. That one is not a grant, but Chairperson, can you join me this side, please? and the other one is the neighborhood development grant. That is a grant, I know, but there is an understanding on that one. There's an understanding on the... an understanding, lastly, on the Development Partnership Indirect Grant. Well, the others that I have not counted are smaller, what you call it, grants. But on the other side, there's also the Financial Intelligence Center at 89%. We thought that it would be important. We can't ignore them. We can't ignore this understanding. But what I would really like you to do for us, because of the tight program that we have, as you have heard, that we have requested Public Works perhaps to allow us to start with you. If we could just try to go directly to the point, assume that members understand the background, what really going directly to the point, with the business like, so that we have a sitting at 2 o'clock. After Public Works will be Mr. Anderson. I don't know if you're the way you're looking at me. After Public Works will be speaking to Arts and Culture. So we are in your hands, teachers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As what my colleague here, Dali Majeke is the Chief Financial Officer. Dagulanis Kakani is the Head of Communications. And Andrew Ace is the Chief Director in the Asset and Liability Management Section. There will be one or two other colleagues joining us from the Neighborhood Partnership Development Grant as well. I must say that this presentation is almost like a trial exam because this is the fourth quarter performance information. We have got a draft annual report that is in the printers, and we are coming back next month to come and table the annual report in Parliament. So in a way, I guess you being a new committee, you have had then the privilege that when SCOF meets, we would have had a trial run. So thank you very much for giving us the trial run so that we will know what the other committee is going to ask. We will briefly cover the 2009-2010 expenditure outcome. And although we wanted to talk about the fourth quarter, the fourth quarter also covers the entire financial year, so we could as well talk about the entire financial year. We'd look at the issues of budget versus expenditure according to economic classification. And then we will look at the program budget versus expenditure. In the letter from the committee, there was a mixture between things that are programs and those that are grant. Assets and liabilities is a program. Financial management system is a program. And the National Partnership Development Grant is actually a grant. And then the FIC is a fiscal transfer from the Treasury. The director of the Financial Intelligence Center will do a separate presentation to deal with the Financial Intelligence Center. And we'll be able to explain. And then lastly, we will deal with what we see going forward. Safe to say that the final appropriation for the National Treasury for the 2009-2010 financial year was 62.8 billion rand. This excludes statutory amounts. The statutory amounts would have been the debt service cost and the transfer to the provinces, equitable share. Of the 62.8 billion rand that was appropriated, 1.3 billion was for operational budget, and that would cover programs 1 to 6. But since your questions were with respect to programs 3 and 4, we will only deal with program 3 and 4, and I get it because the other programs, their spending is as close to 100 as they possibly could be. 61.5 billion rand was for the transfer budget, that is program 7 to 9. Under these programs, we cover transfers to treasury-related entities like the Financial Intelligence Center. We also do the international transfer, but also on Program 7, what we cover there is the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant. The under-expenditure amounted to 176.8 million rand, which is 0.3% of the total appropriated funds, which means that the spending is 99.7. And I guess the reason for the letter was that you are not so much worried about the overall, you are worried about this particular program, which is what that I will then choose to deal with. That is the picture in terms of economic classification. Spending on employees was 98.4% of the total. Goods and services were 92.5%. Transfers and subsidies 99.8%. Payments of capital assets were 71.5%, and overall spending was 99.7, as I had indicated earlier. These are the program budget versus the expenditure. Of interest for today's meeting is Program 3, which is Assets and Liability Management. It is a budget of 60 million rand. Spending was 63 million, so the variance is 7.8 million. And later on, I will go into the details of why the underspending and in which areas did we underspend. The second one had to do with financial management and systems, which is basically the rollout of the integrated financial management system and the work with respect to supply chain management and contract management. The underspending would be more related to the integrated financial management system rather than the other sub-program. Let's start with assets and liabilities. The under-expenditure of 7.8 million rand is mainly due to lower spending on the capital structure and financial distribution policy project. This is a project that we had embarked on. It is in our strategic plan. It was a review of state-owned enterprises' balance sheets. It's very much a project that depends on the participation of the state-owned enterprises themselves and the relevant shareholder ministries. And as we were looking at this, putting together a dividend policy in the process, to send out the focus ended up being on the proper capitalization of the state-owned enterprises. There were delays in the development of the treasury management system, lower spending on operational expenditure, mainly training and development. The spending on training and development, we decided to do a significant part of our training internally in the treasury rather than doing it outside. It proved to be a challenge, but it did save us a decent amount of money. There was a call in government to cut down on travel and subsistence costs. So you would realize now that we would ask the committee, can you please start at 9:30? Because if you start at 9:30, then we don't have to fly the night before. We can fly in the morning, so we save on hotel accommodation, and also because people didn't sleep over in Cape Town, then they cannot claim subsistence. So to the extent that Parliament has been accommodating us on that, it has helped us significantly. The second aspect of the travel and subsistence cost was just doing some basic things, like trying to book flights way in advance. You get a better discount that way than if you book closer. So I guess a question to the committee is that if you inform us too soon and you say that come to Parliament tomorrow, we might lose that opportunity to save. But still, we were able to realize the problem. Lastly, was the vacancies that we have had. We have reduced our vacancy rate during the the process in assets and liabilities. And in spite of that, we have still not been able to spend all of the money. And let me then come to the personnel stuff, which is an important thing for us, to say that at the end of the previous fiscal year, we had zero posts that were non-funded, and we had 38 positions that were vacant and funded. By June last year, we had reduced that vacancy rate to 20. It remained at 20, and as the 31st of March this year, the vacancy rate with respect to this program were 11 posts that were not filled. And let me explain. It was almost impossible to have 100% positions filled in these programs. And part of it, or rather the main part of it, has to do with the fact that the Treasury tended to groom people internally. So when a DDG goes and we advertise that position, what would normally happen is that chief directors within the Treasury would apply for that. That means it leaves a vacancy elsewhere. When that happens, if we appoint from internally, then there is a vacancy of a director. If the director position becomes vacant and it goes on like that, but still we were able to contain or reduce the vacancy rate from 38 in March last year to 11 at the end of March this year. I can say that in spite of there was no compromise with respect to
I'm just sorry, PG, maybe I did not clarify this from the beginning, that you have 15 minutes to do your whole input, after which the members will have 30 minutes, so that by 10 o'clock, that's why I asked you to zoom on those issues only. Sure, but you may continue the way you want.
Okay, then thank you, Chair. That helps me, because then I can serve the other committee as well. And with respect to program 4, the under-expenditure of 53.8 million is mainly due to less than anticipated spending on IFMS and transversal systems, lower expenditure on operations, mainly training and development, venues and vacancies and facilities and on vacancies. The IFMS project implemented the asset management modules to the leading sites, being the National Treasury and the Limpopo Provincial Treasury. There were capacity challenges within the Department of Defense in terms of the asset management, which has resulted in lower spending, because then we couldn't roll out the system as fast because there were those challenges. There were capacity challenges within CETA, which is why I must be in the other committee. CETA is charged with the execution of the IFMS project, and they have been unable to recruit adequate skilled resources. There has been a delay in the due diligence and protracted contractual negotiations pertaining to HR customized off-the-shelf system and procurement management module. And this resulted in lead site preparations commencing late. But what else had been the under-expenditure? The close analysis shows that the under-expenditure, 1.2 million of that had to do with compensation of employees. 48 million had to do with computer services. 1.2 million with training. 1.2 million with venues and facilities. And payment for capital assets was 863,000. Of that total amount of 53 million underspending, 33 million had to do with the IFMS. And in terms of this IFMS continuing, the operating costs, there we had 408,000. That covers only the transversal system. And in there, if you want to know which one of the transversal systems, understand we can deal with that. I guess the more important thing has to do with the neighborhood partnership development grant. The under expenditure of 83.3 million is mainly due to lower spending by municipalities for the NDPG. Lower spending by municipalities has been less than projected in the milestone payment schedule. And this had been attributed to staff turnover rates in municipalities compromising executive buy-in for the grant program, delays and irregularities in tender processes in some of the municipalities, estimate that a third of the NDPG recipient municipalities need intensive support and monitoring to sustain and ensure quality product, quality output. Thirdly, the difficulty of accurate cash flow forecasting for large multi-scale, multi-stakeholder programs. Fourthly, the National Treasury has insisted on municipalities meeting the conditions of the grant and objectives of the grant. For example, we insist that business plans must be submitted, that leverage must be established, and that operations and maintenance plans must be in place, etc. And that is in terms of the division of revenue grant. And lastly, municipal capacity building. The mandate of the grant is spelled out there. It is covered in DORA. I will not bore you with that. And the purpose of the grant was also covered there. Suffice to say that the NDPG is a hybrid grant. In terms of Schedule 6, there are direct transfers to municipalities. In terms of Schedule 7, indirect transfers to municipalities, service providers via the PDF trading account. So I guess when you refer to the two grants, that is what it refers to. So this grant is made of those two components. The indirect component that you referred to in your letter under paragraph 3 being a Schedule 7 grant, and the direct grant to the municipalities being a Schedule 6 grant. In total, 57 municipalities were awarded the grant, and there is a commitment over the medium to long term of 8.8 billion rand. I guess this captures it for you in pictorial terms, that in 2007-2008, which was the establishment year of the grant, the first appointment was made in July of 2006, and the NDP business plan approved. And it was during that period that you could see the improvement in the hours of the grant. There were 72 hours in 2007-08, there were 72 hours in 2008-09, and in 2009-10, there had been 90 hours. And you can see the improvement in the use rate at the bottom, from 15% to 67% in the previous financial year and to 90% in the year that we are considering, of 2009-10. And that is the outcome of the expenditure of the grant, if we want to look at the detail. It's split into a technical assistance grant, which is the indirect grant that we have talked about. Spending there is 81.6%. This is a grant that is driven very much by demand. So it must be that municipalities are asking for the technical assistance, or to the extent that we identify and say that we think that you need technical assistance with respect to this, that we will directly pay the service provider to provide that technical assistance. And then, I guess, at the cold phase of delivery is the conditional grant itself, which is the direct grant to the municipalities, where spending is 92.1%. The fiscal transfers, well, the Financial Intelligence Center, I said that we'll deal with that, later. Then in terms of the way forward, the one of the key drivers has been the vacancy rate, and from the Treasury perspective, critical posts are being filled in line with the mandate of the department. But as I said earlier on, we must bear in mind that as promotions take place, the vacancies are created at the bottom, and that is why you saw that although we were able to bring down the vacancy rate, we still have vacancies. Secondly, that performance monitoring systems are in place to track and monitor program spending patterns. And lastly, that we will continue with cost savings measures within the department. So part of the staff is not necessarily underspending. Part of it would be savings. Savings here being that we were able to obtain the same service at a price that was less than what we had anticipated when the budget was compiled. In terms of the integrated financial management system, this year we'll see the final rollout of the asset management module, and that should be done by the end of this fiscal year, that we would finalize the rollout of the procurement module at the lead site. We were asked by the Minister of Finance to to prioritize the procurement module, since the many of the capacity problems that we are having in departments have to do with procurement. But in the end, you can't throw systems at people. What you need are actually warm bodies that are able to execute, and this should be done by October 2010. And then finally, the HR module, which is driven in the main by the Department of Public Service and Administration, and that would be hitting the ground in November this year. There is the bidding process for the remaining supply chain management module, which is the inventory management. Tenders are expected to be finalized this year. And lastly, that would reprioritize the project to manage the incapacity within CETA. I think that what we need to understand here is that CETA's role has to be changed to that of a primary systems integrator. And to the extent that there have been capacity constraints at CETA, it delays the project. CETA has seen so many CEOs and acting CEOs over the past 10 years. The boards have been changed so many times. There is an interim board at the moment, and a board member has been asked to act as the chief executive. So, to the extent that you have got the incapacity at CETA, it impacts on the speed with which we can roll the IFMS. So, the last slide has to do with the assets and liabilities, that the capital structure and financial distribution policy project will be completed this year. And that the development of a treasury management system to be on par with the implementation plan. Lastly, the NDPG central technical assistance would be procured for direct award support and diagnostics. We will review budget projections based on historical financial information and secondary data about municipal performance. And lastly, qualitative assessment. The NDP is insisting on transfers that are based on approved business plans, demonstrating clear value for money, sustainability, and leverage. There aren't that much of quick wins, but what is important here is that absent a plan, we can't release the money because the money will go to waste, and we end up having to claw back the money from the municipalities.
Thank you very much, PG. At least the injury time was about 3 minutes. Honorable members, I recognize Honorable Swart's hands. Any other hands? Honorable Novo? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just on slide one, 2019 National Treasury Expenditure Outcome, it consists of two parts. One is the operational budget, the other is the transfer budget. And it looks as if you used the transfer budget in full, 61.5 million, and then you say you transferred 61.5 million, which means that, the 0.3% of the total budget is a bit misleading, because everything that you didn't spend or the under-expenditure is really in the operational budget and not so much. So if you express that as a percentage, it would be much higher than 0.3%. But that's just by the by, Chair. Then if we go to Program 7, Provincial and Local Government Transfers, you refer there to an under expenditure of 83.3 million. And you say it's due to lower spending by the municipalities for the Neighbourhood Development Partnership grant, which is a pity, really. And then right on the next slide, you say that 57 municipalities were awarded with the NDPG grants. And they committed over the, which means of only 57 of the 260 odd or 283 municipalities, is that correct? Something like that. But you say over the medium to long term, you've committed 8.8 billion. But the 83.3 million couldn't even be spent by the municipalities. Is it a good thing to actually now commit 8.8 billion, knowing that we're not going to spend it, if they couldn't even spend what they had up to now? And then just the last question, Chairman, the fiscal transfers, you say that there was an under expenditure of 22.4 million, and it was due to less than anticipated transfer payment to the Financial Intelligence Center. Can you just give us a bit more explanation as to why that couldn't be paid over? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Some points have been covered by the previous speaker, but I would like to know from Treasury, what magic does it have to be able to be faster in filling the vacancies as opposed to the department? And secondly, is there any exodus of their personnel except those that are going in onto upward mobility? Thank you.
Honourable Harablon, just to say that honourable members, all of us, we all equal with the right to participate. Those who would like to raise questions from the portfolio committee, you're also welcome to raise questions if you so wish. But we're all in this together. The chairperson said, I'm afraid.
Thank you, Chair. On slide 8, program 4, under expenditure of 43 is mainly due to less than anticipated spending on IFPS. My question is, can you give more explanation on that, especially on the mainly trend development?
Sorry, if you could just speak to the mic, I think there's something wrong with this mic.
Okay. Chair, on slide 8. Some explanation on that, on mainly training and development. I see they say there's a problem with that because expenditure on operations, mainly training and development. Some more explanation on that. And then also on bullet 4, capacity challenges within CETA. CETA has been unable to recruit adequate skilled resources. Why? Thank you, Chair.
Any other heads? Honorable Snell, you're fine. Okay. Thank you, DG. DG, I think that the members of this committee are in agreement with you in terms of savings. But the concern that we have within the savings is that we must save, but whether we need to save at all costs to the detriment of the work that we're doing, because the issue of vacancies is a trend that cuts across, that you find that certain what you call projects could not be executed because of the issue of vacancies. And we think that is an issue that really needs attention, needs to be paid to, so that we don't shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, that other question, you're raising challenges in CETA, but maybe we'd rather not, ask a question because we're expecting to deal with CETA at another level, but I think as my colleague has raised, that maybe at your level, we're not very sure the management of, not the management, but the authority of CETA, the role of treasurer within what you call a CETA. Maybe it would be important that the Treasury does what you call give support there. But as I say, that I have discussed because I don't want to raise other issues which are not necessarily related to this, but which have come before this committee between ourselves and CETA. The neighborhood, if we come to neighborhood, the neighborhood, Maybe it's a good program. However, since its inception, one has had a problem around it being understood by the supposed beneficiaries. And you have also indicated in the previous years it has not been possible to exhaust the budget. There could be improvement this year, but the issue is really the understanding of those people who are supposed to be implementing it. To what extent do they really, what you call it, understand? That's one. But two, just the southern neighborhood, this program, what is it called, NDPG, does it cater for the small, what you call a municipality in Limpopo, for instance? Because most of the beneficiaries, to my understanding, would be your Johannesburg, your what you call the
manager of is shaking her head vehemently. But my understanding, I want her to tell us that your ordinary small municipality does what you call a benefit. And if you would also like also to get that list of the beneficiaries of this neighborhood a program. This development partnership indirect grant is a small grant we had asked you to try to be fast, but if you could, I think I missed its intention. You know, I'm not very clear about why we're having it, let alone the, its objective. I'm not very clear about its objective. So, you will help me with a minute.
Honorable Masango. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to ask on the technical assistance. What type of technical assistance are they giving to municipality? Because I just see the graph is growing on spending, and on the ground we don't see any changes at the municipal level. What technical assistance are they giving to the municipality?
Respect to that particular program. Okay. DG.
With your permission, Chair, this is a subject that my colleague Lee here is very passionate about. I will restrain her when she goes too far.
Good morning. Apologies for being late. Long story. There was a comment made about it's a pity that there is an under expenditure of 83 point. There was a comment made right in the beginning about what a pity it was that there was an under expenditure of 83.3 million and some sort of lack of credibility around the ability of municipalities to improve this situation. The initial concept for the NDP, the Neighbourhood Development Programme, is to run for a period of 10 years, and the authority has been given to make awards to municipalities in the amount of 10 billion rand over a period of about 10 years. And we're sitting at about an 88% commitment of that 10 billion rand, taking into account the current NPEF figures that you'll have seen elsewhere. If that is the case, then we should be looking at a spend rate, ideally, of at least a billion rand per annum. So 83.3 million is actually quite a small amount relative to the bigger picture, although you can always say that any under expenditure is not good. It's quite difficult for us in Treasury to anticipate which of the municipalities are not going to be able to spend because of the kinds of reasons for the under-expenditure. Things like procurement processes taking unnecessarily long, decisions not being made by adjudication committees, bid committees, and so on. Churn rates at all levels, senior levels, decision-making levels in the municipalities. Sometimes strike action on site. Typical what you would find in a construction industry. Hopefully we'll be able to manage the negative impacts of underspend better within the NDP, within reason. I think the bigger issue that needs to be addressed is the kind of lack of understanding of what we are trying to achieve with the grants. So the big objective you've seen in the Division of Revenue Act is that we are trying to improve the quality of life for township residents, and also to drive in leverage, particularly private sector leverage, but not exclusively, into township areas. And there's a reason why that has never happened in this country. And a lot of what we try to do with the technical assistance is to build a bedrock of good plans and long-term visions for those municipalities, programs that involve a range of partners that they can implement over a number of years. And the NDPT is a small part of that that kickstarts that initiative. So if you think a 10 billion rand program is large, we have much bigger dreams of that. We want to leverage at least 4 or 5 times more than that in those 57 municipalities that we're working in. And the lack of understanding is something that we've been addressing with an operations manual, with our own technical assistance within the team to particular municipalities. The success of that, we've only just launched our operations manual. Although we've had a toolkit for some while, there seems to have been a misalignment in that understanding, and we're hoping that the operations manual will now resolve that. So next time we're here, hopefully we can give you some better news about understanding. It is difficult. Development is not for sissies. And what we're trying to do is sympathize the lessons that we've learned and help municipalities that have not started this kind of work before. And what's interesting is we're finding now municipalities that are not recipients that are taking our operations manual and starting to apply it within their own municipalities. And then the types of technical assistance that are applied through the grant itself, development and program coordination, it's the warm body that drives the and champions the initiative in that municipality. Construction management, any kind of detailed planning, whether it's traffic feasibilities and studies, environmental studies, property audits, land zonings, detailed designs for the creation of particular capital assets and so on. That's the kind of technical assistance we'd be looking at. And then in particular what we do is what other grants do not do is we put a heavy emphasis on the operations and maintenance of those assets. How is that municipality going to gear up for that? Does it have the wherewithal? Do they know how they're going to manage it? Which department will be managing that asset once the asset is completed? What is the community's role in managing and using that asset? What are the user fees if such a thing applies?
When I was growing up, I was still young, there was a song, I don't know, it was Peter Sledge or something. It was saying there are more questions than answers.
That's a comment I can make. But the second one is that we're not sexist this side, teaching. So we don't use them like the processes. It comes from you. We have it.
I was about to say that it's better that it came from her, because you could imagine. But that's the passion you should see. She drives it. Yes, we would welcome the hearing on FITA. I'm sure every government department that would come will tell you the same story about FITA. So I think let me not comment and wait for them to be here. Honorable Makolo, the feeling of vacancy and whether we have experienced exodus, you might have realized that in the Treasury you have seen basically the same people that you had seen over these years. We have been able to retain staff. that the Public Service Commission released a report earlier in the year that said that the average stay of a senior manager in government was something like 2.5 years. The Treasury was an outlier in the sense that the average stay of a manager in the Treasury is closer to 5. So my deputies that I have all been there for at least 6 years. They might not have been in the same positions, but there are 8 DDGs there. Collectively, they had spent more than 100 years in the Treasury. So that tells you something. Exodus, in a way, the sad thing about this recession is that it benefited government. When the economy was booming and everybody was expanding, they were recruiting and they were taking people from government. When the recession set in, it sort of almost like stabilized things. What we actually had seen was that we had people who had left the Treasury who had come back. And we had people who had come from the private sector to come and join us in the Treasury. If you ask any bureaucrat why they are not filling vacancies, they will tell you that it's because it takes a long time to fill positions. But it has to do with the wrong interpretations of the regulations. What I've found is that if there are delays in the Treasury in filling positions, it would rather be that the human resources division struggles to put together an interview panel. So, you know, the rules that says that if you are going to interview a chief director, there must be 2 deputy DGs on the panel. So if they are not available, that gets delayed. But I must say, Honorable Sogoni, that you have also been looking at the performance of the Treasury. You would remember that 6 years ago, we were debating with the committee. The vacancy rate in the Treasury at that time was 26%. Today, we are talking of a vacancy rate of 6%. So we have made a big inroad. What we would say is that it has not compromised delivery, but that is not necessarily a good thing because it meant that we had to work the few we are having even harder. So my worry is that they might get burned out, but we will continue to fill this position.
Thank you, Tichi. Now, what I say, Tichi, in your report, the issue of vacancies comes up, and it also appears in your way forward, in one way or another. It means that it's saying, you said yourself, it is not DG. Sorry. Now, it just reminds me that I'm still that member of the ANC, you know. But now, I was saying, DG, so even in your way forward or not, it is there. So, in fact, in some of the debates in the House, it has come out clearly because some departments, they have openly said some of the reasons, for not implementing some of the programs is issues of vacancies, you know, it's vacancy rate that is there, whether it's ability not to have the right skills or what, we don't know. But I have difficulty in pronouncing Liz's name. What?
Pernega.
Pernega, yes. I mean, you have been around. Sorry. I like that you say development is not processes. Yeah, it's good. But you know the challenge, DG, what I have is what she said about the 10 billion for this neighborhood. It's over 10 years. Now, we must take the I must be able to say to colleagues, no, colleagues, let's throw away the DFMA or the appropriation bill on which we appropriate funds at the beginning of the year, which are appropriated from the 1st of April to the 31st of March for another year, because we have some programs that run over 10 years. How do I say to public works, you understand it? That will defeat the whole purpose of then budgeting, if then we say to Treasury, because it's you can budget for 20 years, it's fine. But because you, Public Works, and Arts and Culture, you must budget for a year. In the budget that we pass, in terms of your strategic management, in terms of strategic plan, they are approved by the appropriation, by Parliament, for a year. Not for 3 years, but you know that over MTF will be doing this in the outer years. But the appropriation that is passed for a particular year. Now, if National Treasurer comes and says, no, for us we have 10 billion rand over 10 years, 83 million rand is a small thing that you can't really, what you call, it's not so important, it's very small if you look at the 10 billion. I'm not sure about the message that we're trying to convey in terms of the good governance that we're trying to achieve. So, and if it comes from National Treasury, then I think it's something that I hope that you are not conveying that message. I hope you are not conveying that message. But I think that the message that we must convey from National Treasury, which is a custodian of the public finance management, it must also, what you call, convey that it must show the same dedication as National Treasury that we expect from the department. Not something that says, though, with National Treasury it's fine, there are other departments, there are rules for National Treasury, there are rules for other departments. It is not going to work if we do that. But Honorable
Sir, just a question I asked about the non-transfer of 22.4 million to the Financial Intelligence Center. I don't think that's been answered.
Chair, Co-Chair.
No. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm just trying to check if we've got the ability or the capacity, even at that level of National Treasury, to anticipate this type of situation. Because under expenditure is becoming, has been a problem over many years. Are there no anticipation mechanisms so that we can try and minimize the levels of underspending? You know, we've had situations of some departments saying, talking about savings. But if you interrogate the savings, it's not necessarily doing the same jobs at you know, lower rates and things like those. It's cutting corners. In most cases, even these vacancy rates that are happening, people tend to call them savings. They are not fully vacancies. Yet some of them are not performing. So I'm just trying, the bigger issue is really, because Treasury to us is the model department, if you call it that way, that must do better. Now, the one thing that I want to raise is the issue of this neighborhood grant. Neighborhood development program and so on and so on. Maybe it's a matter that we also need to engage further with cooperative governance. Sure. We can have 10 billion over 10 years. If we don't have the capacity to spend this money, we are just going to end up with the same problems. And I'm saying that there are more, like you said, there are more questions on those than answers at the moment, but we'll not take time out. I'm just flagging it as a matter that I think you should take forward with cooperative governance and yourselves to see what else can we do, because then the questions will arise. We don't see some of these programs taking place at local level, yet the money is there, appropriated every year, 1 billion a year, we've got 10 years, but we don't see the results. Yes, maybe development is not resources, but let's appropriate and let's put it properly where it should be, if this is the case. We can't put difficult programs, difficult to implement like other programs, where we say this is the money, yet people can't access the money, there is no improvement, the levels of poverty are still high, Development is not happening at local government level. You can name all the ills that we have in society. All the message that we are sending is that now we can't make excuses anymore. 16 years in this democracy now. We've got to move at a different pace and to be able to deliver services. That's basically what I want to say. But the rule of anticipation should apply so that we are able to minimize this, because other departments are going to come with some of the problems. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think that the point that you're saying about the role of anticipation is a point that I wanted to come with in closing, but I will still come with in closing. But thank you very much for raising it now so that the DG can respond to it. DG, this is your last opportunity now. We're winding up.
I'm sure I will have another opportunity. The question about the Financial Intelligence Center. We said the executive, the director of the Financial Intelligence Center is coming to talk about it. He's going to be doing a separate presentation. He is here. He will deal with that. Lee, can you deal with this? Because the money that we are talking about, we are talking about the money that we would leverage from outside of the... So we are using the little money that we have to leverage investment by the private sector. So we are saying that over the next so many years, we will leverage that amount of money to come into the neighborhood investments. But Lee, you are more passionate than this thing and harder than me.
You know, you're making a lot of comments about how these things don't just happen. We've had 16 years of democracy, but we haven't seen the kind of programs like this lifting off. And the purpose of the technical assistance is to create the space for municipalities to put those programs in place. And the 10 billion rand you can consider over 10 years, approximately, you can consider that as seed funding to municipalities for them to be able to pull in other sources of private money and public money. It's probably true to say that this is... can't just be an effort of Treasury alone. A wide range of departments need to be pulled in, including COGTA, SANREL, environmental people, tourism, housing, human settlements. All departments need to be involved, provincial departments, as well as local players for each of the areas that we work in. And each one is a complex project. It was quite interesting, somebody made a comment earlier about not seeing that we're catering for small municipalities. The issues are the same. We do, by the way. About half the portfolio is in smaller municipalities. The development challenges are the same, whether it's a small municipality or a large one. And sometimes large ones are getting it wrong, and small ones are getting it right. And it's really a matter of how they apply that technical assistance to pull the different players together. This is also an issue that's been discussed in the planning ministry. There's a special session that's just started on spatial planning and what that means for the country. And I think that is another layer of what needs to be put in place from a policy point of view that will help township regeneration to lift off the ground. I think we should be concerned, because township regeneration is the responsibility of everybody, but the responsibility of nobody. The most direct players at the moment are Treasury through the grants, and COGTA and the rural development people through the Integrated Rural Development Program and through the Urban Renewal Program, both of which are due to end, certainly in their current form. So yes, we are entering into a new phase where we need to work out how exactly we can do this at a much larger scale and at a much faster tempo. And I think you need a lot more than 10 billion rand.
Okay, so that's your last question had to do with anticipation, unless you want to deal with it first, because you said you're coming to it at the end.
NPG, if you... You could try to deal with those questions, but I wasn't aware that the Intelligence Center was still going to make their own separate presentation. But fine, come in, Fiji.
So the question,
at least I can respond to the question. So.
The question about anticipation of underspending is a good one, but at the same time, it's posed in a negative way, because the way in which I would want to pose it is, instead of just the focus on the spending part, is to focus on what is concretely delivered. So one of the things that lacks in many grants is an anticipation that says that we will deliver so much of X, because then it changes the mindset. It comes more in line with the government's new approach of outcomes-based method. So now, what did we do with this grant? It's not the only grant that has been designed this way. The other grant that has been designed this way has been the PTIS, which is the Public Transport Infrastructure Grant, that we realize that it's no point beating up municipalities or provinces and say that you are not going to get this money unless you have a plan. What we did with this grant was that, yes, you are not going to get this money unless you have a plan. But you know what? We are going to do more than that. We are going to provide you with technical assistance so that you can put a plan in place. But then we also realized that consultants are having a field day. And so, hang on. What are the competencies that you need to put a plan in place? We said we will procure these skills and have them in a central database of providers that are approved, so that as a municipality, you know that this is where the expertise is lying. You know the treasury will pay for these things in terms of this technical assistance. So the proverbial horse being taken to the river here comes to haunt us, because here it is, we're saying that we want a plan before we can give you the money. And we also say to you, we are prepared to give you assistance so that you can come and get the money. Not only that, we will provide you with people, we will assist you to put a plan to come to us and ask for the money. And it still does not happen to the extent that it is. So as Lee said, at the end of the day, you could put grants, you could put systems. If you do not have warm bodies that are focused on delivering the service that you are trying to deliver, then you are not going to be getting anywhere. So part of this, the anticipation had to do with us having to say, let us beef up the ability of these municipalities to put plans in place. And lastly, I'll part with this one, that it's a long time since South Africa built a new town or city. You know, Eskom is building a power station in Lephalale. Do you think that the municipality in Lephalale anticipated that their town will one day be this big so quickly? Of course not. So that says that you are going to be needing a concerted effort to build the capacity of that municipality to leverage all of these kinds of assistance. So it's going to be a tough, long one, but you are not going to do it with just the NDP PG. The comments are well taken. As I had said, we welcome the trial exam, and then we will be back for the final examination.
Thank you, PG. I think you can allow the intelligence center, what you call it, just a response.
They say you don't have to do a presentation. As I told you, you just have to answer the question. Why did you spend 1 million instead of three?
If the presentation is in hard copy form, you can just make it available to us. But the pity that you'll excuse us that we had to start at 9:30 when you were not here and made the comments about the Finance Intelligence Center. But now we'll perhaps request you to respond to the questions. I hope that you got a question.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm sorry, I wasn't here.
Sorry, because the DG is going, I just wanted to make an override over the question that my colleague raised about this anticipation. To ask this question of anticipation, it means, it talks to the question of the MTEF, that every day we raise this question, Public Works will tell you, we raise this question every day. Does Public Works, has it really sunk with the department? Because if you take human settlement, if we give them 15 billion, one at the end of the, when they make their financial annual report, we want them to say, this year with the 15 billion, we've built so many houses. We've done these things that can be concrete. So I think that now the question that really my colleague is raising is that but the experience is different, that it's like despite the MTEF and MTEF saying, giving the people the impression that the following year you'll be getting this much, the outer year is that much. But at the end of the day, there are still challenges. Projects can't get off. First quarter expenditure is always low, as if it was not anticipated. So that is the question really that my colleague is raising, that why has MTF really sunk? And we think that National Treasury should also be driving. We hope that they are driving, because you have particular responsibilities in terms of the public finance management. But I think, thank you very much for coming. We will have further discussions on these matters. Thank you. Okay, you can continue, sir, with your intelligence center. And just introduce yourself.
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, my name is Marie Michelle. I'm the director of the Financial Intelligence Center, and I'm accompanied by Mleshni Naidoo, who's our CFO. Chair, the question of the underspend, the 10.3, in one sense is very easy to answer. The bulk of the item, just over 11 million, was a savings on our IT system that we are rolling out and developing. Now, where and how do the savings occur? We have been allocated a large fund over a period of time to build up the IT systems to enable the centre to work. The centre is largely driven by technology, the receiving of data from financial institutions, the need to analyse and process that data, and then to make it available to the law enforcement and intelligence agencies on a continuous basis for investigation. So there is a huge amount of IT development that has taken place and is taking place and is projected to take place in the future, Chair. This particular item, we were able to acquire an off-the-shelf solution at a fraction of the anticipated cost. In other words, we didn't have to spend on the development as we had anticipated. The solution is an international program or an international product which is being used in South Africa and being developed in South Africa. We're the guinea pigs for the process, which will then be used by other such financial intelligence units across the world. So that's the bulk of the expenditure, Chair. The second part of it is goes back to some of the recruiting issues that have been raised here earlier on. We're in a process of building the center. We started a few years ago from scratch, from nothing. So there's a continuous rollout of bringing staff in. And what is very clear is that there are two components to that, Chair. On the one hand, over the past...
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. You know, the DG did not indicate to us that there were two different or three different presentations. As a result, we allow them a lot of time, and the questions that we raise assumed that his presentation was inclusive of everything. We really apologize because we two committees, we have public works here, but yourselves and us, when you were not here, the PC made a joke that this was a trial exam because we're going to meet in the annual report again where the information that you're giving and the good work, we hear things that you're doing out there, and that is very good work. I mean, but unfortunately, we really request that if you could give us your submission, and then we will invite you again specifically to deal with that. My apologies again. Thanks. PG, my apologies for taking a little bit. We thought that at 10:30 we should be done. But can I get your guidance?
Well,
after the public works engagement, okay.
Maybe we should make this announcement that Public Works Portfolio Committee, we shall proceed to our venue V226 after engagement on this one, so that there is no panic. Can we just finish this one and then we proceed with our own meeting, V226 after? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair, for understanding and colleagues. Chair and DG, we thank you very much for coming. By the way, we're meeting here formally for the first time. May I take this opportunity to congratulate you on appointment as a Director General for this department. The other DG was saying, talking about CETA, having a lot of CEOs and boards over a short period of time.
Chair, with your permission, I hope that this department has now got a DG. Unfortunately, you have to hit the ground running, DG.
Teaching, the issue that we're dealing with the under expenditure, is an issue that we have been seized with, Chair, through you. We have been seized with the department. It is the issue around your low uptake of the incentive grant, amongst others. For provinces and for municipalities. We're seized with that because we have had a series of meetings trying to find the solution. And I would really implore my colleague, the chair here and members, that we really need to find a solution. This is a very important program for us, which is meant to create jobs. It has already created a number of jobs, but we think that the potential is there. It's not at full, what you call, at full speed. We have met with departments that are implementing, we have met with municipalities, and my friend, the chairperson, Mr. Henderson, and Ariel, we have traveled with them as well to say around the country, to say how do we ensure that this program really succeeds. And the issue that people are raising is the reactive form, Comrade Chairperson, that they raise, in that people must report for the previous years and what. Well, it's important to do that because that's the only way that you can know that the people
have really done the particular job. But I think that the uptake, Chairperson, shows that there's a challenge with the type of reporting that is required. Because the uptake continues to be low. But when I look at the fourth quarter report, which again maybe is a pre-trial to annual report, it shows that it's gradually is improving. But how can we show that we can really, it can be at full, what we call full speed? People understand your small, what we call municipalities, where there is no work, you know, really understand what they have to do. Chairperson, I have to report that you also went to KZN, and we went to KZN, and we thought that KZN at least had a better understanding of the program than any other person. You know, there are challenges, but they have a better understanding. They are implementing it better. But also in terms of the budget, provinces, a certain amount, since 84 million rand seems to be a ceiling for a province over which if the people hit the roof, I mean, they seem to be having a ceiling. Now, the issue really is to how can we improve on this program? I mean, municipalities at the end of the year, they had around 50%, and provinces around 40%, I mean 76% with provinces that they spent. But the issue really is that we want maybe a chair, the portfolio committee and the department must improve for this. How to improve on this, in order for this program to achieve its objectives. Before you come in, maybe I can allow the chair, if he has got a remark to make before we allow you, DG. Chair.
No, Chair, not much, just to confirm that the DG is indeed the brand new Director General of the Department of Public Works. We have not, as a portfolio committee, met informally in our own meeting. It's still coming. But this is our second engagement with him in different fora. The first one was the Department of Correctional Services. The second one is this one. Indeed, he is hitting the road running. And I think we still have to baptize him in our own meeting. But let him get the feel of what's happening before he comes there. This is before these are trial exams before the final exam. But in terms of content, Chair, I think we have the same concerns about underspending and the reasons. We've also engaged with different provinces, and there are difficulties in terms of capacity in municipalities and provinces. So let's just check and learn from the lessons that happened in the last financial year into what needs to happen in this financial year. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Just before I allow the PG and the team, may I welcome the chairperson of Arts and Culture, the Macheron, Bob Kuzumne. Abudi, over to you, PG.
Honorable chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you for the kind words. And Honorable Chair Oliphant, the warning is noted. Unlike my colleague at the Treasury, I can't claim, unfortunately, that experience all of my 2 months, but I can comfortably say I'm accompanied by people who've at least been with the department for 5 years, the maximum being 17 years. So hopefully that's a positive thing for us. And briefly, Chairperson, I would like also to introduce the team that I'm with, starting at my far right. That's Adam Tombeni, who's the Chief Director for IGR. We've got Yonita Prinsloo, who is currently the acting CFO. Our CFO is en route to a conference in, abroad. And on my left, I've got Mr. Stanley Henderson, the acting Deputy Director General for EPWT. Treasury DG mentioned someone being passionate about what they do. Can I assure this committee that Mr. Stan Henderson is very passionate about what he does in EPWP. I also have Ignatius Arillo, who is the Chief Director within the EPWP program. And lastly, Ogat Maluzi, who is the Chief Director for Inner City Regeneration and Project. Chair, our presentation is twofold. It covers the issues raised in your letter, which is the underspending on provisioning of land and accommodation program, as well as the EPWP incentive grants. I think my sense, Chair, is that the issue of the EPWP incentive grant is quite an important one. And with your permission, Chair, I would like that we rearrange our presentation and we actually start with that part of our presentation. And whilst my colleague is going through to that page, I would also like to take this opportunity, Chair, based on the previous discussions with the previous presentation, to really accept that the issues that you are raising, particularly with regard to the incentive grants, are very important, which is the issue around the uptake. How can we improve that? Is it an issue of reporting, or what are the issues? In the discussions before coming to this committee, one of the things that became important to us was to stress the issues that have an impact on the numbers, particularly with regard to the uptake around the incentive grants. We will do the presentation. Whilst we are doing the presentation, I will also ask the Honourable Chairperson to allow, at the end of that presentation, perhaps a brief analysis around some of the challenges that can be done by Mr. Stanley Henderson here around what are some of the critical factors that have an influence on the issues around these grants. What is the impact of the different financial reporting periods between ourselves and municipalities, and how do they impact on the ultimate numbers that get reported, and what is the impact of the lags between the performance and the payment of the incentive grant? With that, Chairperson, and with your permission, I would like to ask, because Stan is not feeling well today, I'm going to ask Ignatius Arillo to start with the presentation on the EPWP incentive grants. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. I will just give you an overview of the EPWP incentive grant. Just as a way of introduction, the incentive has now been introduced to all sectors of EPWP from the 10-11 financial year. For the infrastructure sector, it's applicable to the provincial departments and municipalities. The environmental sector incentives are applicable to national departments through their appropriations from National Treasury. The non-state sector is paid to non-government organizations and non-profit organizations through the Independent Development Trust. And then the social sector grant has now been paid as a Schedule 5 grant to provincial departments of social development and education. But we shall be looking mainly at the 10-11 financial year, the 9-10 financial year, considering the fourth quarter. In terms of the incentive for the infrastructure sector for the third quarter, which the payment which was done in the fourth quarter was actually performance for third quarter, because you pay one quarter later. 5 out of the 16 provincial departments have been paid a total incentive amount of 53.6 million, considering the third quarter report, and that would mean that at the end of the third quarter, the incentive payment for provincial departments was 116 million out of the 151 million that was available, which is 77% of the provincial allocation. And then for the municipalities, 47 out of the 68 municipalities were paid an incentive in the third quarter alone for their third quarter reporting in the fourth quarter, an amount of 78.6 million. Total incentives paid to municipalities after the third quarter of the national financial year is 114 out of the allocation of 201 million, which is a 57%. Overall, if you look at the incentive allocation for the 19 financial year, we paid 66% of the allocation, which is 230 out of 230 million out of the 352 that was available. And the performance on municipalities is much lower than the provincial departments. But I think what is interesting to see is that as we go through the presentation, you will see that the performance of municipalities picks up because of the financial year. Because at the end of quarter four of the national financial year, we are paying quarter two of the municipalities. In quarter three, you begin to see in the first quarter of the 10-11 financial year, we've also decided to show a picture of what's happening in the first quarter of the 10-11 financial year so that we get a full picture of what is happening to the municipalities. Next slide. So for the fourth quarter alone, it's 66%. But if you look at the first quarter, now in the first quarter of the 10-11 financial year, we paid for the fourth quarter of the 9-10 financial year because there's a lag of a quarter. Which is the next slide? The next slide after this one. In the next slide here, you said for municipalities, we paid 78 million. For the fourth quarter reporting, and this was paid in the first quarter of the 10-11 financial year. You begin to see that the performance of the municipalities is beginning to increase. Let's go to the next slide. For the provincial departments also, the payment of the fourth quarter reporting was done in the first quarter of the 10-11 financial year. We paid out of the 16 provincial departments. The number of provinces that are accessing the incentive has now increased. We have 6 out of the 9 provinces accessing the incentive. For provincial departments, we paid 171 million of the full incentive allocation of 201 million, which is 85% for provinces. This includes the fourth quarter payment, which was done in the 10-11 financial year. Because in terms of the allocation, the amount we allowed in the Division of Revenue Act for the 9-10 financial year was for the three quarters.
Sorry, Chairperson, we are lost. We don't find these slides in our slides. Where are the slides he's talking to?
These slides are on the group of papers they gave us, which was said was the incorrect one. They gave us another one and said this is the new one. But it's on the old one, actually, the slide.
Okay, let me show this. Colleague, there is every all got the presentation. You see, there was a presentation outside, which was written in big words. Now they have changed to a new presentation. Have we all got that presentation? Have you distributed to? Has it been distributed to all the members? They are also available in the old presentation. Sorry?
Let me just say. No.
That help.
Okay. There's a revised presentation which has been circulated now. Now, in the revised presentation, there are 4 slides that were added. These slides that I'm looking at are in the latest presentation. They are not in the first that had been distributed. So they're in the latest handout.
What we are asking this side is, has colleagues received this revised presentation, which is like this one? We all got it, yeah? Okay. We are on page nine, yeah?
Yes,
yeah, so we are on page 9 with the revised presentation. It's slide 17 that we're dealing with now. Okay, continue. Just okay. Making that comment.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. You may continue.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So for the, if we look at, so the way the appropriation is done, for the DORA, we have three quarters, we pay for three quarters of the provincial financial year, because the fourth quarter will be paid in the 10-11 financial year. So the allocation for 10-11 has fourth quarter, it has the fourth quarter payment, and then three quarters for 10-11, because you always pay after the quarter. So the fourth quarter performance of 9-10 is only paid in the next financial year. But that has been, if you look at the figures here, which is summarized here, you see that what we had looked at for the 9-10 financial year, this gives you the correct picture that for provincial departments, 85% of the allocation was paid in terms of what we budgeted for. And then for municipalities, the figure for the after the end of the fourth quarter, 9-10, which is three quarters of the municipal financial year, we've paid 207 out of the 302 million. So for municipalities now, after three quarters in their financial year, the incentive payment is 69% of the allocation. So it is increasing with their financial year, which is the lag, which is the lag that we have. The next slide. The incentive grant is beginning to have the intended performance of encouraging public bodies to exceed their full-time equivalent work opportunity targets. Provincial departments in KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, Western Cape and Eastern Cape have exceeded their targets and have been paid extra incentive amounts. 11 out of the 68 municipalities in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Northwestern, Western Cape have exceeded their full-time equivalent targets by the fourth quarter of reporting, which is their third quarter. And then for the 10-11 financial year, the number of municipalities that will access the incentive is going to increase to 126 from the 68 municipalities. So we're seeing the numbers doubling. Now, looking at the first quarter, the progress in the 10-11 financial year, looking at the first quarter so far, for provincial departments, it has been paid to 8 of the eligible municipalities in 5 provinces. 85.9 has, out of the 330 million available for the 10-11 financial year, will be paid. That is representing 26% of the provincial allocation. For municipalities, 56 of the eligible municipalities have been paid the incentive. For municipalities now, at the end of the first quarter of the national financial year, which is now the fourth quarter of municipalities, if you take their financial year, for municipalities, we've now paid 200 million for the incentive out of a possible allocation of 201 million. So for municipalities, if you look at 9-10 financial year, in terms of their financial year, we've paid 99% of the allocation. But in terms of the 10-11 financial year, because there's an overlap, it's representing 32% of what we have available for municipalities in the 10-11 financial year. So we're beginning, looking at the first quarter, I think the picture is beginning to look better. Municipalities are beginning to get a sense, and public bodies, of how the incentive works. We're beginning to have better reporting, and also we'll talk about some of the interventions that we're putting in place. Also, in terms of provincial departments, for the first quarter, we've had reports from Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Northwest. They have reported they have not been paid the incentive simply because they did not exceed their threshold or their target. But sometimes when you see a zero, you may think people did not report. But it's just that they are targets that they're supposed to meet. This table shows a breakdown in terms of the payments that for the fourth quarter report, looking at the fourth quarter of the 9-10 financial year, for provincial departments, 85%. Next slide. For municipalities, for the fourth quarter, which is their third quarter, it's 69% of reporting. And then this just gives you a snapshot in terms of the first quarter of the 10 financial year, that for provincial departments, we've paid 26% so far of the amount that's available for 10-11. Next slide. For municipalities, we've paid 200 million now, considering their financial year, which is 32%. For the first quarter alone, it was 106 million. So what we are progressively seeing is that the amount being paid to municipalities is increasing. Next slide. Okay, next slide. And then we just wanted to give you a view of the non-state sector as well, which was one of the incentives paid in 9-10, which went to the IDT through the transfers. There, the final budget allocation for the non-state sector is 204 million, and out of that amount, 114.5 million was for the community works program, which is housed in COCTA from the 1st of April, but in the 9-10 financial year, it was with us as part of the non-state sector. Out and including the non-state sector allocation is an amount of 14.5 million for the Independent Development Trust that has been appointed for administration costs for the IDT, which has been appointed as an intermediary to manage the non-state sector on behalf of the Department of Public Works. And then for the Community Works Program, the incentive amount consists of the wage costs and the non-wage costs. The non-wage costs amount to 58 million and the wage costs 91 million. By the end of the 9-10 financial year, Department of Public Works had transferred the full allocation to the two programs. That's for the non-state sector. Then that just shows the breakdown that in terms of the community works program, we had spent 98%. In terms of the actual program expenditure, it was 98% of the allocation that had been transferred to them. Next slide. For the NGOs, the payment was 40 million that had been paid to the NGOs. Next slide. Okay, that's it. I think the last thing, as the DJ had said, some of the measures that we are putting in place to improve performance, and the DJ will add more, is that we've appointed data capturers to help public bodies report better. We've appointed 90 data capturers. We've also entered into a partnership with the department, with the DBSA, through the Cienza Manager Program, which is a program where they support municipalities to help them implement programs technically. We're also planning to train officials in labor-intensive methods. We're planning to train municipal officials. We're planning to train 1,200 officials in labor-intensive methods. We've gotten funding from the local government sector. And also, we want to provide, we're continuing to provide technical support to municipalities to help them design their projects better, so that once their projects are done labor intensively, we can then have more full-time equivalents, more work opportunities created, and then that means that the full-time equivalents are more, we can pay more of the incentive. Thank you very much.
Now, you're not well. You're not going to speak to us quickly.
Thank you, Chair. We just like to emphasize that at some of our previous engagements, there was a very clear questions around the urban bias of the program. And a disaggregation of the data shows that we definitely have a clear rural bias now, that many more rural municipalities have been drawn into the program, which I think the committee would be delighted to hear. We have seen also that there's been variable drawdowns across the different provinces, and there are a whole range of reasons why provinces sometimes don't draw down. Some of the major ones would be poor reporting of the data that we can't include. Sometimes it would be under-reporting. And all of that would be linked to the question of human resources also, which means a lack of capacity any time. What we, the department, is doing from our side is to strengthen our technical support to municipalities to enable them to implement both labor intensively as well as to be able to report on what they are doing. And my colleague Nish has referred to the data capturers. Then we would like to emphasize that this is a performance-based grant, and therefore there's always a lag time. Do first and then report. And that's why often the when it seems that the numbers don't add up, it is because of the lag time in terms of the reporting that we have, that's built into the nature of the ground. Thank you.
But you didn't have to stand when you present. You were standing, am I right, or you were sitting?
You didn't have to.
This is the case for the Human Rights Commission, sir.
Thank you. Okay. sorry, thank you very much. DG, you said there are two presentations now. We think that maybe the best thing is that to do all of them and we engage.
Good morning. Just first of all, a quick overview of the department's total budget as at the end of the fourth quarter, which was the end of the financial year.
I think for the purposes of the members, I think we need to indicate which page you are on of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. On page three of page two of the presentation, slide number three. Slide 3, page 2. Quickly on compensation of employees, we've spent 99% of our budget, as well as goods and services, and we've spent 100% of the property management budget. We didn't manage to spend our budget, which we will discuss in later slide, is transfers and subsidies. This is mainly the EPWC grants that we have discussed already. As well as on the infrastructure, unfortunately, there we also didn't manage to spend all our budget. I will give you some detail in the next slide. So in overall, we have managed to spend 94% of the department's allocated budget. If we look at the breakdown of expenditure on the capital budget, we had an appropriation of 1.2 billion rand originally at the beginning of the financial year. We then, during the adjustments estimate, another 241 million was added to this. This was made up of 111 million that we requested as rollover.
I'm sorry, DG. Are we now dealing with the provision of land and accommodation? I would really like to zoom to this one. Please, I hope that I won't dislodge you, but. We just want to, we don't have much time. Arts and culture are also sitting here. Thanks.
Okay. Yes, this was a question on land and building. Just to give you a quick background, 240 million was added, 111 was rolled over. The important part is the 130 million that was added to the budget for the macro reorganization of the state. This is where we didn't manage to spend all the money, and that is why I have to mention it here. One of the reasons for that was some of our clients were not in a position to give us their needs assessments in time because it was newly established departments or it was newly divided departments, and they still had to look at their own plans and processes and structures before we could actually give them accommodation. This is not just residential prestige accommodation, this is residential as well as non-residential office accommodation that had to be found for the newly created departments. So the reasons for the underspending on departmental, as I've already also related to, was the houses. We had some trouble finding suitable and available houses, and we also lost some time on the price negotiation process. Under land ports of entry, we didn't manage to spend the full budget. One of the projects that caused this was at Skulpadhek. At that project, we have a property that is in the middle of the border post that is private property that we need to acquire. It is a national key point, and we cannot afford to have a private property in the middle of the border post that we're planning there. Also at Lebombo, the one-stop border project, that we initially planned for Lebombo had to be now broken down into phases. The whole project has been restructured. This is due to financial constraints and some legal implications and other operational issues that we have that we need to sort out with on foreign territory. On the Rakabisa Tswane program, we had some delays, a small delay on one of the projects that we were doing at the government garage. And the other one was delaying the procurement process to appoint consultants for joint DPW and Tshwane Inner City Precinct Plan. I can report that at this stage the procurement process has been finalized and the consortium will be appointed shortly. Under Dolomite, there was a small under expenditure. This was also due to some delays we had to procure specialist consultants and contractors to do the work that we require there. On accessibility, we didn't have, I think we had 20 million rand budget. We didn't manage to spend everything, unfortunately. This was due to non-responsiveness of the bidders. We had some delays in appointing service providers. We also cancelled the SA Police projects that was part of the original plan because of the police stations that were devolved. The custodianship of some of the police stations were devolved to police, so they will take over that function. And we also had a change in the initial scope of work, but this program is now up and running. We have been able to appoint service providers, and we will in this financial year spend all the money. Actually, excuse me, we will be able to spend more than what we originally budgeted for. If we look on a year-on-year comparison of the capital expenditure, we have significantly improved since the 2007 financial year, where we only managed to spend 57% of our budget. Last year was, or the previous year was 87%, and in 2009 it was 86%. But there has been an increase of 300 million rand between the 2018 and 2009 financial year. That is basically the land and infrastructure. So the last three slides is just to give you an overview of the total budget of the department. Again, per program, we spent 100% of program one, 95% of program two, that is the land and buildings, that are the infrastructure projects that I've discussed. Under program three, which is the National Public Works Program, that is the UPWP presentation that we have done. And then under program four, we've spent 98% of our budget. Of the 6 billion rand budget public works manages, 4.5 billion is earmarked funds that is specifically for either in as grants or incentives, or even if you look at the capital budget, it's earmarked for a specific purpose. If we looked at the earmarked funds, we have managed to spend most of these funds. The problem was infrastructure, as already explained. The boundary fencing, it's a relatively small budget. We didn't spend the full budget there, but there we are dependent on invoices that we have to receive from the Department of Agriculture. Everything else, EPWP incentive grants, we discussed already. And then the only other significant program where we didn't spend everything was the energy efficiency project or program. Also, this was a new program that we initiated last year, but this program is up and running. We are busy retrofitting the buildings. We are busy entering into contracts to also look into the long-term energy efficiency sharing contracts. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, who are in your hands. There's Comrade Kekana there, Comrade Masango, or Honorable Member Masango, Honorable Magama.
Somebody is laughing. Honorable Swart, Honorable Comrade Mwana, the Whip, both of the Portfolio Committee and the Appropriation. Honorable Mashiko, you'll be the last.
Chair, there's something that confuses me. The first, the last week actually on the previous presentation, and this is about the underperformance of the municipalities that they are understanding and the performance is poor there. Now, the previous speaker said they've got database for skills, which municipalities can draw on and they are not drawing on. That is why ultimately they are underperforming. But how I understand you are saying everything is there and they are not utilizing it to its fullest extent. Now the present speaker is saying there's lack of human resource capacity. What is the situation? What I'm trying to understand, do we really have skill shortage, as Gypsy has said, or have we managed to cover that? Because indeed, if you don't have engineers, if you don't have all these people, we can't perform. If you're building a township and civil engineers are not just there to do your sewer and artisans are not there to maintain, will definitely not succeed. So what is the actual situation? Do we need skills? Do we lack skills? Are CETAs? What is CETAs contribution and so on and so forth? What is the real situation that affects the performance of municipalities?
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Comrade African. Honorable Masama.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to start first with the finances. You know, last year when we adjusted the budget for the ministers and the new ministers, and it was not 130 million. It was actually 150 million. I don't know why it is here 130 million. Because even in the books, it was 150 million. I just want to find out why it's now reduced with 20 million.
Which one are you referring to now?
Just slide 4, yeah. Adjustment budget.
Department.
No, it was specific for the prestige accommodation for newly appointed ministers and deputy ministers. It has 150 and not 130, the way we approve it in Parliament. Chairperson, the other question I want to ask, you know, we have reasons for underspending, and one of the reasons is for the Lebombo. I don't understand if we say constraint, financial constraint. And we have underspent, but we complain about financial constraints. Can I get a reason why can't we spend? We complain about finance, but we have money. We didn't spend, and we say financial constraint. The other one is the change of initial scope of work. What was the initial scope of work? Because it's a reason for not spending, we say change of initial scope of work. What was the problem with the initial scope of work? And I want to move to the EPW, and I think the chair of our committee will agree that we need a special presentation actually on this one. I'm not sure with this EPW now. I'm really getting a little bit confused whether do we really know what is EPW? Can we define what is what jobs are EPW so that we can really, all of us, understand what is this that is for EPW too? And the other one, my biggest problem is, you know, it's not now about only reporting. I understand we have a constraint in reporting. But do we really know if people report and say this is what we are reporting, can we really verify that the job is done before even paying people? Because people can report and report and report, and we can pay people instead of reporting. But are we sure, are we paying for something that is being done? Or just because people report, then we are paying them? And somewhere we have to, I don't know who decides which municipalities are eligible, because we have 283 municipalities, and today we are only talking about 68 municipalities. What's wrong with the other municipalities? Who decides to say this municipality are qualified for incentive and the others don't? They don't fall under the scope, and the others fall under the scope. And overpayment of incentive, Chairperson, is going to give us a real problem as time goes on, as more municipalities come in. If we are going to pay a municipality for incentive bonuses, overpaying them incentive bonuses, very soon we'll be running short of money because we are just paying for, I mean, if we have budgeted for, say, KZN or whatever metro we budgeted for, it must just get that. We cannot say it's going to get extra because they have done extra. Where are you going to get money for extra if all municipalities can perform up to scale? Very soon we'll be having all those fruitless expenditure because we'll be just paying. Even if it's extra, we just pay and not.
than what we were before. Thanks, yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You've said a mouthful, Babu Masam. Let's take Magam.
Thank you, Chair. Share with me, it's more a comment than a question. I think the matters related to the project and so on, reporting and so on, will be, I'm sure we'll deal with them in our committee. But suffice it to say that I am concerned, and I think I really want to register my concern in this meeting as well, about the underspending on the critical programs. You see, Chair, my understanding is the primary function of administration is to support the core mandate, to ensure that mandate is executed. Now, you see, you can spend 100% on administration and salaries, compensation of employees, but if you can't spend on your core mandate, 100% on your core mandate, it means you excel better in the payment of salaries and other related stuff, as opposed to, but that does not translate, you know, into the same level of performance when it comes to the execution of your core mandate. So there's a disjunction, and I'm concerned. That concerns me. Two, Chair, is the issue of the incentive grants. That cannot be overemphasized. Again, we'll deal with the details surrounding these incentive grants and what we think are the problems. But again, suffice it to say that the inability, for whatever reason, of provincial departments and local municipalities to access these grants means there's less money available for development within those communities. And what we see is a continuation of what the Chair normally refers to as the capital fund. If you look at the spread of these incentive grants, Chairperson, again, it's in your metropolitan, in your metropoles, as opposed to your smaller, purely if you look at the provinces, the provinces that have accessed the grants so far, are to the exclusion of your mostly rural provinces. Again, that is a cause of major concern, noting, of course, what Mr. Henderson said. But the reporting pattern still reflects, you know, that disjunction. Thank you.
Thank you, Bamagam. Honorable Swar.
Chair, thank you. Just on EPWP, you know, you quite often go out on contract and then you tell the contractor before the time on tender, and then you tell the contractor before the time that there's going to be an EPWP program and that the, you know, the employees must be local employees and they must be paid 90 rand a day, etc. Have you got any way of checking that tender to make sure that the person who's tendered and who's a successful tenderer has not allowed for his normal wages of, say, 180 rand a day? In other words, do you check that to make sure that he's only allowed the 90 rand a day for a worker? That's the one thing. The second thing, Chair, is on page 2, slide 3, goods and services. It says the increased spending is largely attributable to the 30 million written off against fruitless expenditure and 10 million against irregular expenditure and debtors. Can we have an explanation of that, please? Because that, to me, is serious. You know, can I have details about that, what it was for? And we call it increased spending. I call it a huge loss.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nangwani.
Thanks. Mine also is about the expenditure in the municipalities, in the those that do not have the metros. I mean, it's a cause for concern. Secondly, it's about the data capturers. Um, out of the experience we had in the Northwest, I just wanted to check some if maybe they just capture the data, or do they have the verification whether those projects were really performed. You understand what I mean? Because we had that experience of cut and paste in some municipalities, so we don't even know whether what they were showing us was really what happened, except for a few projects. Lastly, Chairperson, is the rollover on page 2. On, I can see that now it's RKTP. The same as the rest of that one. I think the rollover of 54 million. What happened? Because it's just a rollover approved for the following project. Could they give us the reason or reasons why this 54 million was rolled over? Thanks.
No, thank you very much. Honorable Mashiko.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is related to clarity on slide number 13. Bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth bullet on non-state sectors and how IDT comes in. Where is the budget of IDT? Is it a separate, do you pay them like consultants? Do they have their own budget that facilitates whatever they'll be facilitating as intermediaries? And then the data capturers is covered. And about Rakhari Satwani, in April we were with you as a department and we asked for a report because the presentation was spreading to the home, to the rural areas where someone was telling us how far you were going. And we said, it seems it was losing the original concept. Can we get a report on Rakhari Satwani? I don't know whether the secretariat received that report or not, but as a committee, we did not get that report. We asked for that report in April. And the use of consultants, it seems two slides refer to consultants. What will be their job, the consultants? Because it seems if we spend more money on consultants about what could have been done by the two departments meeting without engaging a consultant where it's not necessary, we see it as a fruitless expenditure. And the last one, Chair, during our fourth quarter hearings, we had land reform, and we spoke a lot about per capita projects because they spent a lot of their money during the last quarter, and they said that we asked. They said the problem was with you, the Department of Public Works. We don't say you must respond to it now if you can, but that's a concern. They submitted their business plan in time. That's what they told us. And then you took time to respond until they could only spend the money on the projects during the last quarter, which brings all the inefficiency or into your department, not there, because they said their planning was very, very well. They submitted everything in time. The delay was with your department. We deliberated on that issue, and the lady kept on saying, it's public works, it's not us. So if that is your problem, really, relook at it, because you are affecting other departments when they come to us, most of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mashiko. I think I'll give over to the chair after the responses, because I think after the responses we'll have to go and proceed with our meeting. But to make this point, Chair, I know that you don't want us to leave. You want us to stay until the end of these matters. But I want to make this point. You see, that we will have an opportunity as Public Works also to engage with the department, because we would be concerned as well to receive different responses on the same issue, depending where you are and who's talking. You see, fortunately, we've been on the ground also on these matters to check the actual implementation of some of the programs. And there are problems. There are problems, genuinely. And I think that to the extent that the officials of departments appreciate the problems of municipalities and of local government and other departments, if they don't do that, we'll keep on having these problems all the time. You see, we'll come here and say we've got data capturers, we've got this, we've got capacity building here, and it's not making an impact on the ground. That's the one concern that we have going forward. But also, you'll see that we've been engaging. The reason why we respond to this invitation is because they're actually trying to deal with some of the myths sometimes, or some of the untruths that are raised about the department. Because I'm not here to defend them, I've got no reason to defend the department, they've got to do their work. But we've taken a test case with, for instance, correctional services. When they meet with their portfolio committee, they say it's Public Works. It's Public Works. And then we say, let's have a joint meeting with Public Works and Correctional Services. They were not that brave anymore. What they did not tell, for instance, just an example, what they did not tell their portfolio committee is that they've got money for maintenance in prisons. They're not doing that. They are drawing the money, but the maintenance is not happening. But when Public Works is not there, they say all these things. Maybe in this case that you are saying it's true, but we want to take up all these challenges with other portfolio committees, other departments, so that we ensure as well that Public Works must do their work. I've realized also that sometimes they behave like wheelbarrows, DG. If you don't push them, they don't move, you see. So those are the issues that we have to correct within the department. But in the understanding and all the issues, I won't comment on the Khadija Tswane, because I know you know that it's getting out of fashion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I think you're quite right, Chair, in terms of if you bring one department, very easy to say the next department didn't do this work. It was supposed to do this. But what we're doing now with this department is to where we think that there will be a need for Public Works, for instance, to respond, is to invite them so that they are not accused. And if they are there, they're not going to be accused. But if they're not, they're not at the meeting. Singers will point at them, no, Public Works didn't do this, doesn't do this. I think it's a fashion, unfortunately, with the department not performing. I mean, when they are not performing, not really to be honest in terms of their own challenges. However, Chair, I just want to say to them, the report that we're having as a committee is a report that is signed off to National Treasurer at the end of the fourth quarter. This is how we have spent up to this month. But as a fourth quarter, sometimes we understand that it might be possible that you have not tidied up your everything. I'm saying this because I'm looking at the figures here. What Public Works gave us, for instance, in terms of the your expanded Public Works for non-state sector, no? Yes. With the National Treasury, there's 121%, in other words, 121% spending, 21% over expenditure. But the report that you're giving us today is saying now we have spent up to 100%. Now, we are aware that you also clearly there were challenges with this program because 50% of that program was adjusted to elsewhere. Now, of course, I would have to say it one cause again.
Very teaching. But to say it to one cause. Because you're giving us the figures, the other figures. Now, which is which now? Which are the correct figures here that we must accept now? That's my question.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The questions primarily fall into three categories. I'm going to ask you, Anita, to deal with the specific questions regarding the land and accommodation budget, and including the specific question from Honorable Masango around the difference between the 130 and the 150. I'm also going to ask Obed to deal with the issues relating to Lebombo as well as the Rehabisatswane issues. And finally, just to give enough time to Mr. Henderson to deal with the issues relating to the issues of EPWP and the accessing of the grants, the issues relating to reporting, as well as the verification of the work done. And perhaps as a bit of an intro to that, I think we need to appreciate, and in a way that the Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Olfan, has referred to it, this issue that the issues that bug or plague municipalities around skills and capacity are also reflective of the fact that that grant has not been fully uptaken by the municipalities. In addition to that, I think it's important that we also recognize that this has been the first year for EPWP, and some of the problems that we have experienced have to do with really getting traction in establishing the programs, and we hopefully are going to see a difference in the way the program progresses into the next years. The second issue relating to EBWP is because of the number of stakeholders, it becomes important that the coordination process happens fairly efficiently. And with the program starting in the first year, they will naturally be teething programs around that coordination and facilitation and the role clarification so that everyone gets to know what is it that they are supposed to do and when. And that has a direct impact also on the program itself and how the numbers get ultimately reported. Yes, there is an issue around skills, particularly in feeding the numbers into the system and making sure that the performance can be verified, because it is the performance that gives rise to the uptake of the grant. But whilst Mr. Henderson is applying his mind around some of the issues, Chairperson, I'd like Anita to just answer some of the issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Unfortunately, as the person sitting here as acting CFO, I cannot explain the difference between 150 million and 130 million. We've been reporting on the 130 million as part of the adjustment. If the committee will allow me to maybe come back to you with that information. Albert is going to talk about Lebombo, but just from a financial point of view, which is, the question was raised, how can we underspend and then say we have financial constraints? We have to sometimes take into account, especially with a major project like this, that you have to look at the future years. You might have enough money to start a project now. You might want to start a 100 million rand or a 500 million rand project, and you will only need 10 million this year, and you have the 10 million. But maybe you do not have the 500 million in the subsequent years. So we cannot overcommit government in that way. We have to look at the full life cycle of the project, and that is why we sometimes underspend, because we don't have enough money to proceed with the project in the next financial year, and we have to readjust our program to maybe start with it later. And in the case of Lebombo, we've restructured it. But Albert will give you more details on the project itself. On the Question of the fruitless expenditure. The comment that says that we have increased our expenditure by 30%, that slide refers to, if you look at the columns, there's a column that shows our fourth quarter expenditure and our third quarter expenditure. We have increased by, I think, 31% from the third quarter to the fourth quarter. So the comment that relates to the increase in expenditure talks about the increase from third quarter to fourth quarter. On the rollover for RKTP as well as all other programs, in the department we have the property management trading entity that delivers the services to all government departments. It's not the Department of Public Works. The Department of Public Works is seen as a client to the PMTE, just like any other client, and there's sometimes a delay between the time that it takes. The PMTE will pay the contractors. At the end of every month, a report is given to all client departments as well as Public Works in the form of a claim for payback of money. The full amount that we requested for rollover at the end of the previous financial year, we're totally committed. It was already paid. The contractors were already paid on the PMTE side. It is just when the claim reaches the Department of Public Works, it is already there at the end of the financial year. So all the money that was requested for a rollover was already committed. It was already owed to the PMTE. The contractors were already paid at that stage. So it wasn't projects that were running late. It is just the time difference between when the contractor is paid and when that money is claimed from the Department of Public Works. Maybe I can just mention, but I think it has been mentioned, the Department of Rural Development that the Honourable Member has mentioned. In a lot of these cases, we need to look at the specific, we need to reconcile all the projects because sometimes the business case will be delivered, but there might be other issues if you look at all the projects. So in a case like that, we need to assess the full program for that year and look at all the deadlines and all the milestones and who didn't meet it before we can actually say if it was Public Works or the client that was at fault there. I think I've covered everything.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. I will respond to various issues, but I will start with Lebombo. Firstly, to give the historical background of Lebombo project. In 2007, the Lebombo project was registered as a one-stop border post between South Africa and Mozambique, emanating from the bilateral signed by both countries. At the time that we started a planning and costing, the project was costed at around 1.3 billion rand, excluding the professional fees. One of the challenges there was that the planning or the footprint of the development was to be 50% in South Africa, 50% in Mozambique, and in terms of the agreement, all the funding was to be paid by the South African government, and the MTEF funding that we received was far lesser than what, so we had to shelve the project. But going to the World Cup, we had a problem that the current situation by then at Lebombo was that there was a huge congestion in terms of a traffic relating to freight, relating to public transport and also passenger vehicles. We came with a plan to put what we can call a phase one, which is part of the overall one border post, to say we need to separate the freight transport from the passenger and private vehicles, whereby we went on tender in 2008 April based on the specification that we went out. The tenders, they came, the cheapest was 187 million, and our allocation by then was 130 million. We went to Treasury to say, can they augment our allocation? We were unsuccessful. We had to reduce the scale further to say, let's only do the bypass road, which then came to 57 million. And then the remainder of the money had to augment the shortfall that Bayol Drift border post, which was then under development, as well as the Golela border post. So if you go to Lipombo at the moment now, you realize that we have separated the traffic. That's a bypass road that carries only freight transport, and the original route is only used by private vehicle. We have also constructed a pedestrian facilities that processes people who walk through the border post. In terms of scale part, whereby we said that there was a delay in terms of the houses, that a business which was a hotel and tavern, it was within the development footprint of the border post, and then they had the permission to develop from the local administration, which is the chief, and then the process of acquiring that land also took close to the year, because we had to do valuation. The owner had to do his own valuation. The both valuation reports had to go to Land Affairs Board for approval. By the time we resolved the matter, the main contractor lost time because we didn't give them access to that piece of land whereby he was supposed to build the road, also move the overhead electrical power line. So that in also contributed to under expenditure in terms of the cash flow. The other question raised by members was the RKTP. RKTP, you would recall that it was in a program approved in 2005 with a view to revitalize the city of Tshwane, and then it is a partnership that we entered to with the city with a view that we going to build a specific precinct, like for an example, Maraba Stad, Church Square, Paul Kruger, Salvagop. That program still continues, but then when this financial year, during our strategic plan, we were advised that developments are also required in other small towns, villages, and then we expanded that a program to be inner city regeneration and rural development. Inner city, it looks at Pretoria, it looks at Johannesburg, Durban, Cape Town, and other small towns, with a view to say that all state-owned properties within the city, they should be either made available to municipality to utilize if we don't have a capacity to renovate them and make them available to national government. And then in rural sector, we say we need to develop small centers, service centers, whereby we can reduce the amount of walking for the beneficiaries of service delivery. So in short, we can say the RKTP is still continuing, but we're also expanding the concept to other parts of the country. The other question was around the consultants. We mentioned in the report that we have appointed the consultants in partnership with City of Tshwane. City of Tshwane, by Monday, they are responsible for town planning and macro planning of how cities should work and function. And as public works as a partner, we also have an interest to locate the headquarters of a different department within the city. So we bought the land called Salvagov, whereby up to date we have secured the interest from arts and culture, from correctional services and other who could locate their head offices there. But that land is still a farm. It has to go through the process of town planning regulation. These consultants will handle that part for us. Immediately we agree and approve the bylaws of that area, we'll start with development of the precinct. The same will be applicable to Marabastad, whereby we'll place in the Department of Justice, Church Square, whereby there will be a treasury, and then other planned prison will follow as well. In terms of Dolomite, the question is that whether do we have a skills capacity? The answer is that that is not the case. When Dolomite program started, there were firms of consultants which started with the program. But as the program grew internally from professional services, there was a feeling that those guys have earned experience and therefore they should continue being appointed as experienced consultants. Our view as project manager, we said no. We have a mandate also to include other engineers into the picture so that they can perform and also gain experience, because Dolomite is not only confined in Pretoria, it's all over. Therefore, we have it in Merafong, in Katlego. So if we only restrict a limited number of firms to do the work, we'll be in the hindsight killing the industry. Hence, that debate and that interaction somehow affected our planning. And we could say that we are in line to address that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I hope the next speaker is not going to take that long in responding, but you were very elaborate, and that's why the chair said we must allow you. Obviously, DG, in our next engagement, we'll have to unpack further the inner city regeneration as part of the issues that we've got to come back to. You said Mr. Henderson or the DG, or you covered? Okay. Oh. We wanted to leave the space by 12, but we'll get into injury time. That is public works. The rest will remain. But please, just take into account that we are on injury time. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll answer the questions on EPWP very briefly. The first question was about skills. I think the reality on the ground is that we have a shortage of engineering skills in municipalities, especially the skills to implement projects labor intensively. So, I mean, there was a question about clarity. Do we have skills? Do we not have skills? And the issue is engineering skills is a problem, which is why we are trying to boost our capacity to support municipalities to design projects labor intensively. And then the other question was, what is EPWP? We know, according to the definition of EPWP, we are looking at the creation of work opportunities, not necessarily full-time jobs. And that's where we have a lot of debates. But the work opportunities, we're working with different public bodies to see how we can increase the duration of those work opportunities. Because the longer the work opportunity, the more the impact in terms of reduction of poverty. Which is why, like in the infrastructure sector, we're encouraging maintenance programs where we can employ people for longer durations. So in EPWP, you're looking at people who are employed under the Code of Good Practice for Special Public Works Programs in terms of the employment that is created. Now, in terms of, there was also a question about reporting. The incentive is paid on in terms of the full-time equivalents that are reported. That's the basis on which the payment is done. In terms of reporting as well, for phase two, in terms of the reports, we record names and IDs. Every work opportunity has a name and an ID number. In phase one, we do not have names and ID numbers. So we have a database for every public body, every work opportunity that we've reported. We have a name and ID. We can go and verify the figures on site. So the reporting is more credible. And it's because it's something that we later on do audits for in terms of the incentives that are paid. In terms of the municipalities, I think what is critical to understand is that in order to qualify for the incentive, you needed to have reported public works in the prior financial year. That's why you talk about the 68 municipalities. That's the eligibility criteria, how we decide on whether you become eligible for the incentive or not. So what we are trying to do is to encourage different municipalities, more municipalities to report so that they can become eligible for the incentive. Because the question was, how the 68? But we're moving towards an increase. That's why now for 10-11, it's 126. It's doubled. And we want to reach a point where all the 283 municipalities are covered in terms of the incentive. So the basis was you reported in the prior financial year. In terms of the rural bias for the incentive, in terms of the incentive, for rural municipalities, we pay 60 rand per full-time equivalent. For the urban municipalities, we pay 50 rand. So we already have a bias towards the rural municipalities, and we're continuing to work with the rural municipalities. They also don't have a threshold. The urban municipalities have a threshold. They have to meet a certain target before you pay. But for the rural municipalities, whatever full-time equivalent they report, we pay them the incentive, and then they are paid also a higher amount. And we as a program also undertaking to make sure that indeed we cover the rural municipalities and help them in terms of capacity. In terms of provincial departments, the spread of the incentive pay is actually more towards the rural provinces. KwaZulu-Natal is a rural province. It's getting most of the incentive. Eastern Cape as well is getting most of the incentive. Those are the two provinces that are getting most of the incentive, and they are rural in nature, and mainly it's on their maintenance programs, on the access road maintenance program. In terms of checking the amounts the contractors are paid, in terms of the reporting, we capture, when we are capturing the work opportunity, we also, the wage rate that is paid is also something that is captured on the system. And we also do, as a unit, we do site verification visits on a regular basis. We get the reports, but we also go on site to really verify whether what's being reported is right in terms of validation of data. And even before we release the data, we always take time to validate the data to make sure that indeed what we're giving the public are the correct figures. I think those are the, in terms of the data capturers, that answers the verification as well. They capture data, but whatever data is captured, there is verification of site visits as well, in order to make sure that the data is correct. I think that in terms of the non-state sector, the IDT, the cost, as part of the transfer to them, there is a cost for administration, which is a cost that goes into administering the non-state sector. Part of the transfer consists of administration costs, and then there's a component for wages. What is for wages, they don't touch. That goes straight to the NGOs. And then the administration cost is for them to be able to to administer the incentive. Thank you very much.
Thank you. DG, is there anything, because we are going to round up now? Chair, sir?
Chair, sorry, the one question that I asked the gentleman that was by now ducked, he didn't answer me straight out. The second question that I asked was never answered about the question of the increased spending to largely attributable to the 20 million write-off against Fruiters expenditure and 10 million again. Now, if they haven't got the figures here, can they just let us have it in writing, please, by, say, Friday? Then I'm happy short of time.
Thank you very much. I think we should get that one in writing, the whole question, including the explanation that the chair will return to about the difference that Masango raised. I think we should also get those in writing. You said that was the first. The other one, which was, are you comfortable that they have done the first one?
I'll explain to the gentleman what I mean, because I don't think he understood the question, but I think we might.
What the chair is saying is that explain the question so that we must get it in writing.
Yeah. What I'm saying, Chair, through you, is that I know of contracts where you know EPWP programs were lodged, but they were done, and the EPWP contractors were told before the time it's going to be an EPWP program. The people must be paid X rand per day. But they went up on tender, telling the people that they have, you know, that they have an EPWP program. And I want to know, did the tenderer, did he quote on 180 rand a day, which is the prescribed wage, or did he tender on 90 rand per day? And is there any way of checking that?
Maybe what we should do in some of the cases is also to do a case study. If you've got a specific, for instance, on that particular project, then you can share it with the committee. Mr. Swart, you must share it through the chair with the committee so that we can all benefit from that experience. So let's just note it as such. Chair, you take over now and finally.
Yeah. Committee, thank you very much. The chair had requested you, DG, to wind up on your side so that we can close now. In other words, if you have something that you want to emphasize or whatever. But in the, okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I think we will come back with the specific answers to the questions raised by the Honourable Member. But I think more importantly, it is also to ask that the honourable members, as and when they get some of the information, given the fact that there are quite a number of these projects of EPWP all over the country, and we need to make sure that as we get the information to improve these projects, we are able to do that and put in the controls necessary to make sure that we manage them properly. So I would kindly ask the members, as and when they get that information, to please forward it to us, because it also helps our processes. Thank you.
I know, Chair, that you had ruled and we had agreed on this ruling. But in fact, in the light of what the DG is saying, can we request, with your permission, Honourable Swart, that the department does not respond to the question you raised? Because the chairperson is correct of public way, that it's a specific question. We went to KZN, we're going to have a report. But when we deal with that report and where the matter can be, because now you might have a difficulty in responding to it, as you were saying, you're not very clear what is it that is being referred to. Chairperson said, if it could be specific, so that we can be specific, and then he comes out very clearly with the question, and you understand, then you can be able to respond to the question. But the issue, Chair, just on closing, is that Honourable Masango raises the question that what was the adjustment for accommodation of the new ministry? The department is saying it's 150. We have also checked with the adjusted estimates of national expenditure. Honorable Masango, you're right. It was the amount that was voted was 150, not 130. So it's something, PG, that the department needs to go and verify so that we'd want to have a response on that. But on the other issues, I think that we really need to. We were listening to Mr. Ario responding clearly as we deal with these issues of this incentive grant. We need to engage more and more because I think that there seems to be an understanding, a misunderstanding of what is it exactly that is being said here. We all need to have one understanding so that when we go out, we can be able to promote what the department is doing as members of parliament, but also have be clear in terms of what are the expectations. Were you not there, we can respond on your behalf because we understand. But if we don't understand here, then... I think that with the permission of the chairperson, we will engage you more, whether it's from their initiative or from our initiative. But also, Chair, I think that there are policy issues that we need to revisit here. This 50 rand a day, which was agreed upon maybe 2005 or so, is it still what you call the correct amount and what and the whole what you call the concept? Maybe it's something really that we need to revisit sometimes, not necessarily yes. But I think it's a policy matter that will be led by the portfolio committee, and would like to participate in that kind of discussion, because at least whilst we're trying to create this is it MTE, Mr. Henderson? Is it MTE, is it called? No? I mean, this FTE, or FTE, the person, you know, the FTE. I think that we support them. But at least it must be able to buy bread, you know, at the end of the day. If it doesn't even cater for that, then it becomes a problem, you know. Thank you very much. I don't know, on that note, you're going to be leaving, we're going to be dealing with art and culture. I'm not sure if they're not going to say anything about you on their own, what you call it, understanding. You see? I hope that, I hope you're not joking. I hope you're serious. You're serious? Okay. Well, you see, I hear it in the report, I have not looked. You see, then the issue that the chair was saying is that I would really like you to be present when people say public works didn't do this or supposed to have done this, because we have invited them, because there are certain, what you call, understanding, and my colleagues have gone through their report. I didn't have time, and they're saying you have been mentioned in their report. I know that you said you have another commitment we are supposed to set, but how you handle that, you might, what you call, maybe leave someone just to be your ear, whatever is done. Thank you very much for the time, and also for the indulgence you gave us this morning. We are supposed to have left by now. Thank you very much. And my sincere appreciation to my colleagues for also, I mean, they were here from 9:30, and we started with the National Treasure. Thank you very much, colleagues from the Public Work Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
I thought they were going to meet with the portfolio committee. As they are not going to meet, I think they are at liberty. I was going to say, as they are not going to meet with the department because they are implicated, they can just sit and listen and not respond.
Yes, it is. Yes, thanks, Chair. Two issues, Chair. I think we would like to get the formal copy, and I will also leave two officials to listen so that they can get the context. And then if there are any issues, we'll document them and be able to provide a comprehensive response. Document it.
No, it's fine. That's in order with us. Thanks.
there's a floor crossing now from the table side by Zinse. Zinse, you're crossing the floor? Oh, okay. Bufarsa. Do you want to go to the floor? Nanne, in fact. Neban, and the police. May I welcome you, Tichi, and the team, and my sincere apologies, you know, for making you to wait. But as you know, we are really under pressure. We're dealing with the fourth quarter when we, very soon, you were not here yet, but the team was here when the DG of National Treasury said it's like a pre-trial exam because we will soon be inviting you for your annual report as other colleagues. Thank you very much. But I also appreciate that Public Works have left someone from the Portfolio Committee was deployed here. Okay. From Public Works. From Atom Kaza. Well, thank you very much. Are you from no, the other gentleman. Is he from? Are you part of Atom Kaza or? Well, thank you very much for coming. But so you'll convey the message to the Portfolio Committee for Public Works of what we achieved. Of what was said here. Yeah. We are supposed to have started at 12, so we're really behind time. But let me just thank you for responding to our invitation, but also to say we had to invite you because of the number of programs that you had in order as a department, in order to promote some kind of entrepreneurship at the level of community. But now, as a committee, we a bit worried that many of these programs were not spent, you know, there was a very, very low spending with some programs, only the expenditure being at 15%. That is the program on investing in culture programs. In other words, your program for cultural development in international cooperation. In fact, the highest understanding, it could be higher, it could be less in terms of the expenditure because your capital works for projects. I think that's where Public Works comes in.
you were only at 41%. So, well, and the other small, what you call a program, but we really invited you. The report of National Treasury says that on program 5, experienced by far the largest lower than expected spending of the total available budget of 1.2 billion. Department only spent 71.3% of that. The lower than expected spending can mainly be attributed to slow spending on the allocation for capital work projects at public entities. So we, well, as a committee for appropriation, we worry that very soon. In fact, one of the reasons we're inviting you is that we foresee a situation where people will be asking for rollover. And this morning, we were saying to National Treasury, who are the custodians of the Public Finance Management Act, that they must tell us, does the medium-term expenditure framework, is it functional? Because for us, we think that the reason it was introduced, it meant it easier for departments to predict and to plan what they, how they are going to, I mean, to plan their programs, because there's a three-year rolling, what you call a kind of planning. Now, the expenditure side does not seem to be, it seems to be telling a different story. That is one. But now, what we expect, for instance, from the department, if some of the programs are not new programs, they come from the previous year. Now, but the difference that we normally find, I'm not saying that it has happened with these programs. We have not really taken notice of them. Is that normally the first quarter and the fourth quarter, there's normally a difference. And normally with the fourth quarter, it's normally what we call your March spike. Now, our main issue then, as I said, Bichi, is the MTF. Is it working for us? Is it not working for us? What are the options if it is not working? What needs to be done? So we are in your hands, DG.
Honourable members, I know that you have been sitting here from 9 o'clock without even nature breaks or anything. We don't have much time. 2 o'clock, we have a sitting. But through you, DG, I hope that you will be in 15 minutes' time be able to conclude your presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Sir. We got your apology.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I also want to take this opportunity to thank my colleagues from Public Works for staying behind. I think the issue is not really to blame Public Works, more than for us to be able to say how we can work some of these challenges together. I do think that to a large extent, there is an over-reliance from government on Public Works across the board. And I just don't actually know if my colleagues, they can ever have the capacity, you know, to deliver, if really we're going to be realistic about these things. I will table the challenges that we're facing, but I really do think that there is over-reliance on Public Works to deliver, and I don't know if my colleagues can meet that expectation. Having said that, Chairperson, I want to start by saying that slide 13 in my presentation, I've removed it, so we will move from 12 to 14. The major areas of underspending, as per the appropriation statement at the end of March this year, amounted to 407.1 million. A significant amount of that is with capital works budget, which is 351.6. And we will get into why that we got that under expenditure. And then there is an under expenditure in investing in culture, which is an under expenditure of 41 million. And that under expenditure is directly linked to cleaning up corruption in the department and actually firing people. 2010 FIFA World Cup, there is an under expenditure of 12 million. And then there is the fourth area is machinery and equipment of 1.5 million. Honorable members and chairperson, the Department of Arts and Culture has got 28 institutions which are situated throughout the country. The immovable assets that are occupied or held by the department's institutions are 135. And these assets range from offices, museums, performing arts centers, libraries, art galleries, monuments, and even graveyards, such as the Commonwealth War Graves. Our colleagues in the public works are the custodian of our immovable asset, with the exception of the playhouses and the South African Heritage Resources Agency. So our colleagues in public works are responsible for acquiring, disposing and managing immovable assets. And the managing includes the implementation of the capital works projects and maintenance. What normally happens is this. Our institution submit their needs assessments. We then sit down, assess, and approve the projects, and then after approving those projects, we then send them with procurement instructions to our colleagues in public works. And for each project, it goes with specification, time frames, and confirmation of funds. And these procurement instructions are then sent to regional offices of public works to initiate the project. We monitor the implementation of the project at the Department of Arts and Culture till the final delivery. Public Work manages the tendering process, appoints consultants and contractors, pay them and claim the funds from Arts and Culture on a recovery basis. So what you see on this slide is that in 2009-2010, there was an allocation of 601.3 million, and we have an expenditure of 249.6. Therefore, there is that total under expenditure of 351. The major contributor to that figure was that we had to cancel the contract to build the new archives library because there were insufficient funds. So there was 150 million contracts that we had to care. And the second reason, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is what I had alluded to earlier on, that there is insufficient capacity both within the Department of Arts and Culture as well as with the Department of Public Works. I think that's a reality that we need to acknowledge. The delay in approving additional funding for existing projects is also another factor. And cancellation of contracts due to underperformance. And, of course, projects not implemented within agreed time frames and specifications laid out by Public Works. There is also a challenge that we have, with capital works projects is that there seems to never be a project that is completed on time. And this does not only affect the Department of Arts and Culture, it's something that is escalations, something that is affecting all governments. And actually what is happening, I suspect, that the contractors delay purposely so that there could be escalations, because they do benefit through those escalations. I think it's something that we probably need to also look into going forward, just what really, why is there so much delay in capital works projects across government, and how much is that costing government? I think we can get some interesting answers there. However, we have put into action a framework for us to address some of these challenges. We have, as I said earlier on, the issues of capacity have been a challenge to us, and we are addressing that. We have appointed the CEO, Chief Operations Officer, and we also are improving our capacity in the department in terms of management of our own facilities. We have also started with client forums together with the Department of Public Works and our institutions. These forums convene bi-monthly and quarterly to discuss the projects and assess the implementation. And also we are now instituting ad hoc site visits conducted to monitor projects as well as the expenditure. And so I think that getting into the next financial year, we will be in a much better shape to address these challenges. And also we have raised this matter with the National Treasury, and the National Treasury has offered the technical assistance unit of the National Treasury to help us deal with the issues of capital works. With regards to investing in culture, this program is a program that earlier on was known as Poverty Alleviation Program. And it is, again, one of those programs that have been very vulnerable in government. And the Investing in Culture program was adopted in 2005. It provides empowerment opportunities for unemployed people from the second economy through job creation and training in arts, culture, and heritage. Its objectives are to support the previously disadvantaged communities. In August 2009, we instituted a moratorium on the program of investing in culture, because it came to our attention that, first of all, we wanted to check the impact of this program across the board. And as we're looking to do that, we found out all kinds of irregularities. In some cases, the projects were not existing, but the money was going to cost projects. And there were projects that were based in Kukuletu, and we were told that they have moved to Kokstad. And it's just a really unexplainable thing, to an extent that even my signature was forged by an official in the department in this program. And then we could not disperse the money whilst we were carrying on with the investigation. Then we instituted the forensic investigation. We had about 16 officials that were working in this program, and we are now left with three. We are now left with three. All of them have been found wanting. I've fired a DDG who was responsible for this, the chief director who was responsible for this, the director jumped ship, fired 8 deputy directors in this program.
And we have also handed over to the special investigating unit. It is doing further investigation with a view of recovering funds where financial losses were incurred. The asset forfeiture unit is also involved in the work to recover this. So the criminal cases that are happening. And that is really the reason why we were not able to spend, because we just had to put that moratorium. Yesterday, Treasury discussing the medium-term expenditure with the medium-term expenditure committee, and this matter of investing in culture was also discussed there. Going forward, we are carrying on with verification of the projects. We are being helped by the provinces in this regard, and we are continuing with disbursement of funds to new projects and to those that have been found to be clean. That is the situation with investing in culture. Even in this case, the Technical Assistance Unit of Treasury will assist particularly with regard to project management. Thirdly, Chairperson, 2010 World Cup, we have an under expenditure of 12 million. That came out of a Fly the Flag for Football campaign. There was an under expenditure there of 3 million. And we also had an under expenditure of 1 million for Africa Day. And under spending of 6 million to public viewing areas and to the African village. The delay in spending was largely due to the fact that our activities, most of our activities, really started around June, but we have requested some rollover funds, particularly with the public viewing areas, so that we can at least maintain the infrastructure there. It can help in providing arts and culture facilities to the communities. With regards to machinery and equipment, there's an amount of 1.5 million that has been underutilized for the purchase of furniture and equipment. And the Public Finance Management Act does not allow the use of capital assets budget for any other purposes. So some of my colleagues say it's a savings, it was not an under expenditure. I'm not quite sure, Chairperson. Thank you very much, sir.
I don't know when you have your own dictionary, we have our own dictionary as far as the savings is concerned. So we'll deal with it. Thank you very much. Suppose that there's no addition for now. Okay, thanks, Richie.
Chairperson, we will share this table as we are sharing it.
So you at liberty to make interventions anytime and assist me with the main question. Honourable members, can we just... okay, we have Honourable... And then Honourable Mogo. So we go to him for now. Sorry, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to turn to slide 7. Could the DG perhaps give a bit more clarification on the new archives building that was cancelled, the contract that was cancelled, in that we now have, we're talking about underspending, but it was due to insufficient funds. If you could just clarify that for me, please. And then also, what specifically are the reasons for the delay in approving additional funding for existing projects? What led to that delay? And then thirdly, also on the same page, it's the fifth bullet, the cancellation of contracts due to underperformance. Could we also just have more detail exactly which projects and why there was no, why there was any underperformance?
Thank you. I just missed your name. I know, sorry. Comrade Jiger, am I right? Jiger, Jiger.
Jigela, Jigela. Thank you. MTSHIQELA, Jigela.
Okay. Yeah, my question is based on to a number of people who have been fired. I just want to direct my question to the DG. Is there any what you could probably call an evaluation and monitoring system that could be in place, probably that you may be responsible for as a head of the department, that could help you from time to time check what is happening, what is not happening, as opposed to which, if it actually happened, I would not see things that have happened and resulted on to this damage and firing of such a huge number of you, which is really taking us back. Thank you.
Project clearly is where the In the previous regime, there used to be called where project does officials would just freely help themselves. It seems that that was that kind of project. But I don't think the mechanism that you're asking were there, were in place. Honorable Mapola.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, DG. Do you have extended public works programs within your department in order to empower those very people that you're talking about? And secondly, this day, this financial year, does the department have a turnaround strategy to change all this that is happening within the department so that next time you come here, we hear something better and improvement from the department, because this department has not been doing well for quite some time. So do you have a thought around a turnaround strategy? Thank you.
Chair, do you? Sorry. What? Honorable Marshall.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is a very important department, especially that it has to do with the people out there who need to be empowered and to be taught what their cultures are through different areas. And for the mere fact that this program of investing in culture has been placed under moratorium, what other avenues did you use to empower people out there
so that we should know that you are still focused on government policies, which mostly are based here, poverty alleviation and educating people somehow in any other way that has to do with what Honorable Ngwaba has said. What do you have in place once this moratorium is on, and how long? I don't know what the moratorium is going to be, and what will be happening in the meantime, because we are going, because this is the fourth quarter, I can say we are going into the first quarter of the financial year, and something must be in place to see what is happening. And I'd like to understand the rollover for the FIFA World Cup. I'm not a soccer player, but I think as we talk about recreation and educating children to keep them out of the street, I don't know whether this all rollover will have anything to do with it. If that is what is it, then I'm okay. And thank you.
Chair, on arrival, I chose to sit closer to the door because I'm not enjoying the best of health. And my low input with regards to questions and deliberations should also be understood in that context. The Department of Arts and Culture, I think knowing from where you started in 2009 and where you are now, you deserve some pat on the back for the decisive way in which you dealt with the rot in the department, taking into account that we are a democracy. You can't just do things left and right, up and down, without following procedure and process. So we want to recognize that and congratulate you on the steps you've taken to give new direction to the department. But you seem not to have overcome the culture of underspending. And these underspendings affect our people in a million different ways. We deny them possibilities for job creation. We deny them access to a better life for all. We betray them in terms of time frames that we set for ourselves in a 5-year parliamentary term. Because if these monies go on unspent, it means we're going to fail to meet the time frames within which they expected their service delivery. Now, we are interested to hear on how, I think this will be part of the turnaround strategy, on how you're going to transform the culture of underspending to the culture of maximum spending for the benefit of our people. I don't care, Chair, whether this is the practice in all the departments. We're not talking about majorities of underperformance here. We want to talk about each individual department and how they address that specific question.
to what extent do you associate underspending and under-delivery to staff shortages? And if there's a connection, what is your time frame to really close this gap? Because it's not like the problem is in the salary budget. The problem is the urgency with which these matters are taken up so that there are people who can actually implement the money set aside for delivery to our people. Personally, I find it unacceptable that we also did underspend in the activities related to FIFA, where we'd promised the world that it's going to be the best of the very best that they have ever been. And anybody who underspends with regard to FIFA activities actually attempts to deny us the position of being the best of the very best in 2010. It passed, but there are other things that will come that will affect this department. I could as well talk about the Olympic Games. So, and those of us who are not very healthy hope we'll recover and live long enough to be there when it happens. The Special Investigation Unit, Asset Forfeiture Unit, you're indicating here that there might be a possibility of some recovery of misdirected funds. Have these funds started dripping in, coming back home, the prodigal money? Have they started coming back home? How can we be sure that this culture is not happening now, even with the new team that you have? It's a bad reflection. I should not ask this question. But it's useless to talk about the ugly past if we cannot be guaranteed that the present is definitely better than the past. In fact, the question that we don't want to ask because it's an embarrassing one is why were you not removed as a DG when everybody else under yourself was being removed? Because the buck should stop where you sit. Thank you.
I thought you started by congratulating him of the good work that he has done since taking over the responsibility. But it's so enriching to have a culture person, you know, I mean, from my side. Just to achieve the well, unfortunately, if you take that hot seat, whether you come yesterday, we ask you about things when you were not even there.
Now, this current DG was there when those things happened. He's not a newcomer. The one in public works was 2 months old. This one can tell you he's been there for some relatively long time now.
DG, I think there's a question that Dr. Farsane asked about the staffing issues. I'm not sure if we had introduction of your team. I'm just interested on the CFO because it's a person that could help you as far as what is it that needs to be done with PFMA, the transfers of, I mean, shifting of funds from this source to another. For instance, on program 4, which was for transfers, but now we hear that again, from that what we call off transfers, monies were shifted again from transfers to current payments. Now, your CFO
will tell you that Section 43(4) of the Public Finance Management Act says that it cannot be done. We had a workshop. We had a workshop with National Treasurer. Was it last week? Precisely on this Section 43, to say what is it that can be done and not be done. You know, we were saying this cannot be done. Section 43(4) says this can be done. But Section 6, it's not Section 6. Some sections here, well, it talks about the approval of the National Treasurer. Section 3 says, it says this thing can be done, but Section 3, Section 3 says, accounting officer must within 7 days submit a written report containing prescribed particulars concerning this to the executive responsibility and to the Reverend Treasurer. That is in respect of provinces. Section 4, 43(4) says, in fact, 1 says, the accounting officer for a department may utilize a saving in the amount appropriated under the main division within a vote towards the defrayment of excess expenditure under another main division within the same vote. And Section 2, the amount of a saving under main division of a vote that may be utilized in terms of subsection 1 may not exceed 8% of that. 3, the accounting officer must within 7 days submit a report containing the prescribed particulars concerning the utilization of a saving in terms of subsection 1 to the executive authority. 4 says this does not authorize the utilization of a saving in I will take 4B. It says this section does not authorize utilization of a saving in an amount appropriated for a transfer to another institution, or obviously for another, what they call the people. Says it spells out capital may not transfer. Amounts appropriated for transfer, not to be transferred. But here, we have transferred. You know? So I'm saying, so I'm not sure whether it was by permission of National Treasury or what. But this report that I'm talking to is a report that was presented to National Treasury. That is the fourth quarterly report that we're dealing with. And they normally tell us that the accounting officers sign off the report. Thank you. Over to you, teacher.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My colleagues will also assist.
Sorry, teacher. I'm sorry just to put you under pressure. You know, we have... up to quarter past, just to finalize everything. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And the question that was raised by you lastly, my colleague on my right, Mr. Rennie, is our acting CFO, is going to answer to that. And will deal with the question that was raised by Dr. Lottridge. And let me try and handle the other questions, and colleagues will also add if they see a need. The question raised by Honorable Chikela talks to whether we had monitoring and evaluation in place. Yes, we had, and for example, I had mentioned the fact that I had there were 8 deputy directors that were fired. Those deputy directors were our provincial coordinators, actually. who were supposed to be doing the monitoring and evaluation. And what happened is that they got tempted. And that was the situation. Now, the trouble we have here is how do I assess a person's integrity when I interview that person? You know, it's very, very difficult. And whether they will be tempted or not tempted in the future, I cannot, you know. And I tend to rely on the premise that was put forward by the late Ronald Reagan. I'm not a fan of Ronald Reagan, by the way. But the framework he put in place, he said, you must always trust, but you must always verify. So the question of verification, monitoring, is absolutely critical. We were very disappointed. What have we done as a turnaround strategy? One of the things that we have done in the department is to tighten our risk management, beef up our audit committees, and we are now also beefing up our capacity for oversight, and we have lifted the moratorium. So there is money going back into the provinces. But as we have lifted that moratorium, we have also worked on improving our coordination with the provinces. We are also looking at working with NGOs, particularly NGOs that are involved in this area of poverty alleviation, and NGOs that are working within the craft sector and so forth. And to try and beef up those areas. Now, let me also take this opportunity to thank Dr. Farsani for his earlier compliment. And Chairperson, I also do take note of the clobbering at the end. So. But it is indeed something that we are working on. And has the money from the Special Investigation Unit started trickling back to the department? Not yet. And all what we have done so far is to do the forensic and found the culprits. And now the Special Investigating Unit, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, is now doing that work. Of course, for that money to come back, there are other legal procedures that need to be in place. We've got to go to the courts and so forth. And Mr. Rennie, the chairperson is back. Maybe you want to answer that question relating to the PFMA.
Oh. Person, in your absence, he thanked me for the congratulations and noted the clobbering. So you may proceed.
If I may try and respond to your query on section 43. In terms of what has been happening in the past is that project funding has been budgeted for under households, the economic classification households transfer. Now, section 43 is elaborated upon in the regulations. Now, what the regulations allow you to do is to transfer from households, because any household, any transfer, let's take for example, investing in coal, so there would always be a goods and services component in that. But the regulations allow you to transfer from households to current expenditure, but doesn't allow you to increase your households from the current expenditure. This was audited by the AG's office, and we were also within the 8% vitamin guideline. So within it was audited, all these things were found to be fine. The reports were also submitted to the National Treasury, and they did not have any problem there. They did not have any query on that.
Thank you, Chair. On the question from our chairperson around the issue of the relatedness of underperformance with undercapacity, it is true that we need capacity to in order for us to improve on our performance. We have just finalized, which was concurred by TPSA, an OD exercise where we have reviewed our establishment, and we've got a number of positions as a result of also the cleanup that the DG has undertaken that need to be filled. We are also approaching Treasury in terms of seeking funds to populate the establishment, because TPSA has given us the go-ahead, but also on condition that we do have funding to do so. We have also prioritized the appointment of senior officials to assist the DG. For the past 6 or 8 months or so, the DG has been without DDGs. He's been with only two acting DDGs. I have just joined from the 1st of March as the COO. So we are concluding that process of filling the DDG positions, and we are also going now to go down to the next level and advertise and appoint chief directors to assist. Even with regard to the capital risk projects, which is championed by my colleague on my left, Ms. Pam Bem Mwazi, we need a lot of capacity to assist her. We have, in the interim, redeployed some staff members with effect from, as the DG has reported, from the 1st of September to go and assist, because we don't want to come back next year and talk about underperformance. We would like not to come back and talk about underperformance in terms of capital risk projects. I think the underspending, DG, on the, if you may allow me, on the FIFA World Cup, it's the fact that we have spent on all those areas that were reported on. However, we spent after the end of March. So that's why then we had to request those rollovers. It's not that we did not spend. We had the Fly the Flag campaign on every school, which was successful. We had our village in 3 months. We did have an event during Africa Day, so which were all linked to the World Cup activities of the department. Thank you, Richard. And Chair.
Honourable members, I will touch on the first three questions. The first one was on the cancellation of the contract due to build the new archives building due to insufficient funds. When we started planning the new building, with the colleagues from Public Works, we were working on the estimates until the colleagues appointed the consultants to do the proper, you know, investigation of the scope of work, and that resulted in escalations in the actual funds that were needed, which initially we have confirmed the funds within our MTF budget, but later when the final report, you know, was finalized, and it was outside our budget. In that case, we had to go to Treasury and request more funding, and we couldn't secure those funds. So the funds, that 150 that was committed for that project, was not spent. And then the issue of the delay in the additional funds for existing projects. Again, when we start, you know, when we send procurement instructions to our colleagues to initiate the projects, we work on
on estimates until final reports, they come back with the appointment of consultants. Then when we send those project instructions, we send them with confirmation of funds that we've got maybe 5 million for budgeted for this project. And again, you know, the regional offices, they will do the investigation, send back the reports to National Department of Public Works, and then back to us for the confirmation of funds. So that process also sometimes it delays with the regional offices of public works, you know, sending the information to national and then back to us. And then also there was a delay also in the internal processes because there was a suspension of senior managers like COO. So you can't say public works proceed without getting the internal approval also from the DEC side. So those were the reasons why sometimes we're delayed. And the colleagues from public works, they cannot proceed if you say, start this project, we've budgeted 5 million and later the project is 6 million. They will have to get approval again back to us, and all those processes have to be, you know, done. And then the third one was the which project that were cancelled due to performance. I can think of one at the stage, which was a big project. The Peter Maritzburg Archives was cancelled due to underperformance. The project is aiming at upgrading the archives and the waterproofing the building to protect the archives building. So it was cancelled with the assistance of the colleagues from the Department of Public Works due to underperformance from the contract.
The time is quarter past one now. I don't know, Chair, with your permission, if we could allow the PG to wind up.
Just to thank you, Chairperson, and the honourable members for your input and showing interest in the work that we do, and we have listened quite carefully on your comments, and we will go back and get our house in a much better shape than it is at the present moment. And thank you very much.
Wish you a safe trip back to your work. God bless.
This is Reverend Farsan. There are many titles. I've said doctor because the Reverend was part of the chairperson of the committee. But Ms. Benmas, if you can start, I could just conclude. I was just whispering here, but I can't hear you, but because I was touched by and Mr. Benmas in high school, I won't fight with you too much. But, DG, you know, I mean, there are issues that are not clear. That is really between yourself. Would like to engage you, not engage you, but I think the public works are aware that from time to time, there are concerns that are raised around their own, what you call it, capacity. But, So, I mean, from time to time, these concerns are raised with public works, and the thing that with public works, we must try to address this thing. If those colleagues from Public Works, they would remember that Public Works has raised something. I don't know if they have raised it in your meeting. That you identify, when I say you, I mean as departments, not just as in culture. Departments identify projects. And these projects get funded. But you don't transfer this money to public work timelessly.
And I think that I agree with Public Works that where possible, if the budget has been identified for a particular project that is between the two departments has been approved, that if those funds could be transferred to Public Works so that we can be able to say immediately after the passage of the budget, you know, that these funds are transferred, so that when now there are challenges, we can be able to apportion blame clearly. But for now, blame is thrown to and fro, the departments, client departments, as they call you, don't do this and this. I mean, for this one, does that those officials from the national department are not necessarily specifically for this. They are for other sections. They won't be able to respond directly. But I think that we really need to engage at that level about this thing. But two, you spelled out about the project, you identify, you know, all the processes that you go through, you spell them out. But just one small thing that you left is, when are these things done? For instance, when in terms of the month is the budget approved? DAC institution submit needs assessment, Director General approves, DAC sends procurement instructions to the court. When does this happen? So that if, for instance, in terms of the Division of Revenue affects the provinces, is that around August this time. So the project that was supposed to be done next year must have been approved by the end of August, October. In your 4x4s and what, all those structures. We think that if this planning is meant to say that when comes April 1, everybody knows what is it that has been approved or not approved. But I'm saying these are the areas that we really need to come back and sort out between yourself and the National Department of Public Works, so that if National Department of Public Works come to us, in fact, I would like them, when we deal with the appropriation next year, to say to them, they must explain to us how many departments are going to do what, where are the plans, have the plans been approved, everything, so that we can talk about this, the implementation. Otherwise, the implementation is delayed, and it's very difficult to apportion who has not done the part of his or her work. Then the colleagues raised this investing in culture, the stoppage of funds. I think that you could not do otherwise. Because clearly, if you had not, what you call at some stage, stopped those funds, maybe today there would be nothing left for the communities. But we'd really urge you to try to move a little bit faster in terms of the processes that you are involved in, so that life should continue whilst the investigations are continuing. But I've never seen anyone, PG, with a covered face I've never heard that. No, this person is for arts and culture. I know the faces that are covered are for the social development. And very respectable people, they see their faces are covered. But they've charged a government that people is what we call a tax. I think that is a good thing, but we need to ensure that service delivery does what we call a take place. You know, the other thing, Tichy, that I don't understand, you know, is that all over that you're asking for those monies that were not spent for FIFA World Cup. And I don't know when is it in this century.
Dr. Farisani won't be there when the World Cup comes back to South Africa. I don't think that anyone of us will still be around. But you're asking for all over to do what?
You know, it's very difficult to article for me to understand. And if that can only, maybe we can get it in written response as to why do you, why should this rollover be granted? But also we would want to check with National Treasury as to, I mean, for such special projects that have been identified for a particular period, if people ask for rollover, to do what? Now, because you should have done this, the World Cup is over, so it's difficult to articulate to really understand. And with the CFO, I think that you were a bit selective in your response in terms of when you tried to explain to us the what federal regulations say. Because the part that you did not add in what you, in your response is the part that says National Treasury says in their fourth quarterly report that the department has allocated some of its budget under transfers, né? The one that you were talking about, to households for activities or expenses under goods and services for 2010 and 2011. But it says this is a misclassification that needs to be what you call reclassified so that we can speak with one language, you and I. So the transfers remain a transfer. And clearly you clarify these households, what you call matters. We don't want to call conflate these issues. So I'm saying you didn't add that part. So clearly I think that that classification that needs to be done must be done so that everybody knows what is it. For us who are not members of part of the department, we only read statements between yourself and your statements of national testimony. It must be very clear to me where is this money supposed to go, where does it belong. So on that note, we'd really like to thank you very much for your patience and hope that the issues that we need to improve on will do. Patrick West,
now you have nothing to respond to. We will deal with these issues that are issues of capacity that are constantly raised. We'll have to adequately to attend to them. Thank you very much. And honored members, my sincere apologies. And I was not told that there's lunch or anything. Nomela Farrell. Thank you very much, Dr. Rutherford and other members. Thank you.